Allah.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And we come back, dear listeners, to this particular Thursday session of The Home Run on your number one talk radio station. I welcome you to this particular Thursday because I am looking at this weather here in the capital, and wherever you might be, you guys can probably also share what you see happening in the skies above you. But for some reason, I see rain clouds. I call them fluffy white scouts. Usually they precede the actual system itself, but they're low hanging. They're a little bit heavy, they're a little bit fluffy, they look like they contain a lot of moisture for some reason, and it is humid in the capital on the 27th of August. Humid in the capital. Humid, I tell you. But, since our discussion of today is not technically connected to yesterday's discussion, so it's not a climate change discussion, not a climate change induced one. Yesterday's one was obviously induced upon, or induced with desertification or anti-desertification, scenarios and stuff like that. But we find ourselves in a context today where we actually deviate a little bit from that particular, setting to a more nuanced but rather agricultural and industrial setting for today's session. Now, we are going into the African continent with this particular conversation because it is born from a webinar panel discussion situation that I had the opportunity of observing and sitting through. And it starts with an interesting setting to understand, which actually, and I think for those of you that are small hold farmers, specifically crop farmers, there's probably just these few minutes that I technically extracted from that 1 hour or so webinar should technically interest you for today's setting or today's discussion. But let's set the scene specifically. Now, this is a particular crop, a particular product that the African continent is known for, and it's the product specifically that we enjoy on a daily basis, for especially for those of you who love celebrating Valentine's Day. You guys love indulging in this particular product itself, and it's a product that helps us to establish the hypothesis for today's scenario about the lost gold. You see, not everything that is valuable glitters. Not everything that looks like a mineral is actually a metal. But it is, in many cases, a scenario that can lead to much prosperity, which has also been the bane of the alternative theory that I have been championing specifically. It's not any other external entity's particular sort of like standard, you know. I'm not talking about standard as in standardization. I'm talking about standard as a battle standard, you know. You show a standard. When you look at a conversation based upon true beneficiation from something, the current template that we always see is a template of let a market slash economic setting be the driver for said particular economic well-being or economic growth that you wish to achieve. There are good and bad elements that you can immediately identify. Some of the good can be you can literally help build up a market, a sector, an industry. But this obviously has to come with targeted particular or particular targeted initiatives aimed at the well-being of said industry or sector. For example, wherever I look, when I see the automaker, you know, the car manufacturer industry across the world, wherever I look, I see government subsidies. There are government subsidies to U.S. companies, to U.S. automaker companies. There are government subsidies to German automaker companies. There are government subsidies to French automaker companies. Government subsidies to Japanese automaker companies. Government subsidies even to Chinese automaker companies. So I see government subsidies everywhere. Namibia is not strong. Namibia is not strong on subsidizing its private sector. A famous quote, and this is just a quote specifically from, this is just from from a COVID scenario back in 2020/2021, but it's a famous setting that helps to portray, for example, a developing government like Namibia in terms of how they, you know, position themselves right next to the industries that they basically, you know, that the private sector industries that basically operates within Namibia's borders. And that was based upon a response measure in an emergency setting. So those are the settings. The famous words by the late President Geingob was, don't you have, when this was an out, this was basically where small Namibian businesses were saying, help bail us out to survive and to stay afloat. And the famous words that President Geingob gave at the time was, don't you have emergency financing or savings or money like that to fall back on during these particular times? I know it's one of the worst examples I can leverage, but it is an example that exists because the whole of the rest of the world, the governments stepped in to basically help their private sectors. But we advance because we're not talking about a COVID setting. We're talking about a agricultural dimension on an African continental perspective. So the conversation, the article is still to come out. It's already written, but still to come out. But the dimension we're dissecting has been, now what happens if you have a product that is for the past 100, 200 years, for the past 200 years, the world is in love with this product that comes from your continent, that comes from your country. For the past 200 years, this product has been the benchmark of romance, basically, has been the benchmark of romance. That's why I started off with a Valentine's Day direction. Has been the benchmark of how some of you guys probably, you know, beat other guys in terms of for the, you know, to be in the best possible position in the eyes of the opposite gender. As well as also how we, yes, us, how we interact with this product as well on a daily basis. Because when you think about chocolate, you don't think about the cocoa bean. When you think about chocolate, you are looking at the end of that particular product's lifespan because you're going to consume it. When you think about chocolate, you don't ask yourself the question whether it's natural or not. When you think about chocolate, you don't technically care where it was produced. You love the packaging or you resonate with the packaging because you grew up with the product. This can either be the brand that I recently stumbled upon, which is a German brand, Rittersport. Lovely, lovely chocolates. I only tasted them for this year, but they are ungodly expensive in comparison to your regular slab of chocolate. The brands that come through from Cadbury, Beacon, you know, household names, even in a Namibian context, you would know which specific favorites you have. But have you ever thought about where does this thing come from? Now, in the Southern African market, two confectionery companies, technically, or three, if I can add Lindt, but Lindt is Swiss. Okay, Beacon and Cadbury are technically British, I think. The one is somehow South African slash multinational. The other one is British. Cadbury is the British one. Lindt, Cadbury, Beacon. Who else is there? I suspect Mondelez is also on our shelves. All four of these particular multinationals, Nestle, yes, how could I forget Nestle? Nestle is there. All five of these multinationals play a pivotal role in ensuring that you have the opportunity, if you are a man who has to reconcile a specific difficult position in your marriage or slash relationship, you buy a box of chocolates, or you buy a slab of chocolate, or you just buy, what's that other weird chocolate bar, the PS range. And, you know, you try to be creative but apologetic. Or if you're someone who just loves to occasionally just, you know, indulge in your favorite sort of like vice, which could be consuming a chocolate bar, you would buy it. And you would sit there quietly enjoying it. I know I'm part of that second, or that second particular dimension of consumer. And I don't think about where the chocolate in my hand comes from. Yet, it is a multi-billion dollar agricultural product. It is literal gold. Probably more valuable than oil in certain scenarios. Now, I'm going to share with you a couple of statistics, but those statistics will come a little bit later in the program, because the essence of the discussion that I'm sharing with you is based off of this particular webinar that I had the opportunity of observing and recording. And it's from a Nigerian perspective, a Nigerian agricultural, agro-industry / economic sense. The three speakers you will hear, one is she's a chocolatier, meaning she manufactures chocolate. The second is an aggregator, meaning a reseller of the cocoa bean, of the cocoa product. And the third is a financier, you know, those people that are investors into projects. The first question, I only use the first question because it helps to set the setting in terms of, you know, what you need to identify to sort out these particular issues that these three speakers will be highlighting. But it's key that these three speakers speak towards things that you could easily identify across Africa, even in a Namibian context. And what is this particular context? So, in a Namibian context, for example, a couple of years back, and even a little bit earlier, I think back in July, when we had Mr. Forrest. Yeah, okay, let me just call him Mr. Forrest. Well, we had him in studio for a good couple of 30 minutes. I shared with him, and also with you, the aspect that we've got cotton in Namibia. Now, Mr. Forrest cited cotton is a very... it's also a particular kind of a cash crop that has unique traits and qualities to it, specifically in terms of how you approach it, in terms of maintaining and sustaining what you want to achieve, meaning how much you want to produce, and obviously to sell on. But when I stumble upon these statistics a couple of years back, so I'm talking about 2022/2023, Namibia was completely just shipping out the cotton. In between, obviously, we've done the NIDA report from the Standing Committee, the National Assembly Standing Committee, back in last year. And that report highlighted, you know, the particular industrial projects that NIDA had to engage in to erect some of the facilities in order to advance Namibia's particular industrial agenda. One of those projects was the tannery at Ondangwa, the garment factory at Nkurunkuru, the garment factory in Kietmanswoop. There was another one. Just need to remember it. And these three particular projects, I'm just going to focus on them, have the opportunity of converting an agricultural product into a direct consumer product that there is a need for. Now, to explain the settings for you, why I am factoring in three different discussions that we've had here on the home run into this one discussion for today, is if you look at the Nkurunkuru empty garment factory, the tannery with the volunteer workforce in Ondangwa, and the other garment factory in Kietmanswoop, where there are question marks, where the Standing Committee raised question marks about how that thing is being administered and managed. You ask the particular question of, but we could have, firstly, if your first concern was jobs, we could have created immediate jobs right there within a month. Okay, not a month. Let me not lie. Please, let me not lie. Right, immediately within a year. Training could have taken place, capacity development. So the skills transfer would have been basically almost immediate within a reasonable amount of time. And production of processed material would have then added, which was the added value component, would have then transferred into the economy. But to have the facilities is not just good enough. Now, I'm roping in a third discussion we had here on the home run again. And that was the discussion where we identified the guy with the broccoli in Kavango East. Or was it Kavango West? Yeah, Kavango West. The guy that grew the broccoli, who didn't know who his target market would be in Nkurunkuru or in Kavango East. Oh, Kavango West, sorry. Who didn't do market research about why is he going into, restoring land, firstly, making it fertile once again, investing into the fertility of the land, and then deciding to start up a particular, start producing some sort of a crop. But he started from a production perspective, not from understanding holistically, if I do this, do I know where I'm going to sell it? The same principle you can apply to the three soft sector items I just described to you in the previous point about the Nkuru garment factory, the Nkurunkuru garment factory, the Kietmanswoop garment factory, and the Ondangwa tannery. The reason for this has been, in that report by that standing committee, they didn't tell us, now that's what my trained eye saw, they didn't tell us, firstly, were people trained to step in and work in these garment factories and at the tannery? Secondly, where's the supply of the raw material coming from? That which needs to be processed. What's the quality of this raw material? And then ultimately, for example, the two garment factories which are supposed to produce the market ready or the consumption ready product, did they have, they call it, okay, in green hydrogen, we heard this phrase known as offtake contracts or offtake agreements, but I would actually call it supply agreements. You can have two kinds of supply agreements. If you, in the accounting principle that I love using, the accounting principle is like this. there are always three parties to a transaction or to a scenario. You, who are learning accounting, there is you. There's Dwight. There is someone that you owe money to that becomes your creditor. And there's someone that owes you money that is your debtor. This is typically how even the private sector views commercial activity. I have to spend money with someone so that they supply me with something, and I have to sell something to someone so that I can recuperate that money that I just gave out this way. It's the same ecosystem or principle-based ecosystem that you've got to look at in this dimension. The standing committee obviously didn't go and interrogate about Nida, did you get supply contracts? Did you establish value chains? No, not value chains. Let me drop that word. That is such a cursed word in terms of overall commercial activity. Did you develop supply channels and supply chains specifically for what you want to do? Why are you here? And that's not what I could see in that report. That specific report of about a couple of... was back in last year, actually, but it actually was done at the end of 2024 for 2025. So, sorry, guys. The understanding that you've got to look at is if you're going to establish a factory or some sort of a processing plant. Why are you establishing it? Do you have supply of the material, of the raw material? Or are you going to enhance a processed or semi-processed version of the raw material into a final product? You have to understand, you have to identify where you fit in a channel. And once you identify where you fit into in a channel, the discussion then has to become simpler about, okay, what value do you add in the channel? Because then only can we talk about value chain or value addition or the dimensions of, you know, what has to be done in consideration to adding value to a raw material. So I set the scene and the setting. Good afternoon, David. Just to greet you, you know.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to set the scene, dear listeners, the dimension of why we're having this conversation today is that I want you to view the conversation, because you will have an opportunity of listening to the three audios. They're pretty short, three particular speakers, but they set the setting in terms of understanding what they're explaining about the future of certain particular crops, certain particular products that we already grow in Namibia, some of us in some regions of the country. And that you can see there's an immediate, you know, it's within touching distance sometimes. You can literally feel, smell, and potentially imagine yourself tasting the wealth from a crop. Yes, David, I have to be dramatic like that, you know. I was once told by a former colleague, you know, I should stop acting like an unpaid actor. And I told her, how does an unpaid actor look like?
Come again?
I was once told by a former colleague, I should stop acting like an unpaid actor. And I asked her, how does an unpaid actor look or, you know, carry themselves?
Yeah.
Her description was, Dwight, the things you were just doing right now, that's the antics that an unpaid actor gets up to. So, not to say that I'm a Shakespearean in any manner, yeah, or a thespian of any sort.
But you know, there are some of the qualities and characters that you don't identify them with yourself, but you only see them when you are doing a certain...
Or when aspect. Someone else comes and tells you.
Yeah, somebody else come and tell you, because some of the things you identify them later on their way, which is fair. Because if somebody made you an actor, or if you get an opportunity to act, maybe you'll become the best actors too. Just those... unutilized qualities. You need to add value.
David is also chiming in on this particular point. But yeah, David, before we set the scene with the audios that we've got.
Yeah.
So the scene is about looking at certain crops,
yeah,
that can be gold For example, the one we're going to look at is a cocoa discussion from Nigeria.
Yeah.
They're going to, you'll immediately pick it up. But, yeah. But here's a setting I want to throw to you, David. We, as Namibia, we're trying to achieve industrialization.
Yeah.
But for now, the industrialization can only be promised by green hydrogen.
Yeah.
That's the reality on the ground.
Okay.
There is agro-processing, but agro-processing has to be positioned close to the resource, meaning where you are harvesting the vegetable, the crop, the maize, the wheat, where you're harvesting it from.
Because
obviously you don't want to add too much costs to it by transporting it all the way to Windhoek, which already happens. But then the concern has been we need more factories because industrialization leads to more jobs.
We don't need, we must have.
The need is there, David. Yeah. The need is there. It's good to say, I visualize, you know, like those people in the church that say, I receive, and then they stand, look there, I'm acting once again.
Yeah.
Those guys that say, I receive, and then you're like, okay, so, how's it going to manifest? You know, everybody can be positive. Yeah, or can elevate the levels of, what's that hormone that elevates excitement levels in your brain?
Is dopamine.
Dopamine. Yeah. Anyone can elevate their dopamine levels, you know?
Yeah.
And then we can all look weird there for like 5 minutes dancing in the sun.
Yeah. Yeah.
But talking about action on the ground.
Yeah.
Action on the ground is usually a thing about put the money where you want it.
Yeah.
And then you identify the resource. And then who's going to be the guys improving on the resource?
I hear you.
But before we actually start, I first want us to listen to the audios.
That is not a problem at all.
Yeah. Why are you being diplomatic? Are you also being an unpaid actor?
No, it's an impact of a recent training.
Monday's training. On that note, guys, besides David's diplomacy, we're quickly going to listen to the three speakers. So the three speakers, just want to get their names correct because they all have Nigerian pronunciation. The three speakers that you will hear, in these three particular audios is, not that document, this one. Also not that document, this one. Ugh. Okay, Dwight. Yeah. So the three speakers that you will hear, the first one you will have a listen to, her name is Uzuamaka Igweike. She's a chocolate producer. The second voice that you will hear, dear listeners, is Ahmed Adiagbo, from a Nigerian company by the name of Rasad Nigeria Limited, who is a cocoa business, specializing in storage and exportation and transportation. So meaning they're aggregator, meaning they buy the crop and they can sell it to the various, whoever needs the crop at various levels. And then the third voice is a financier. Her name, just want to get her name, is Nkechi Amangbo from a finance company in Nigeria by the name of Tamani Invest Limited. On that note, dear listeners, let's have a listen to the three voices, but you will hear them in that order specifically.
Okay, I can think of a lot of reasons why we are not, or we are stuck kind of in producing raw cocoa and exporting instead of, you know, building industries around and processing. But if I were to talk about the one that affected me the most when I started, I would say it's infrastructure, right? Because I started actually producing chocolate. I didn't start as a farmer. I was never a farmer, right? I just went head on into processing. And even though there are a lot of issues, I can't, you know, single one out as the biggest, but I would say this was the first that I experienced because making chocolate requires a lot of power. You need stable electricity. For example, a batch of chocolate can take a chocolate maker anywhere between 18 hours to 60 hours, depending on what you're trying to achieve. Just one batch, that amount of time. And it means that your machines are constantly running. So I would say infrastructure is like the biggest issue that I experienced. And, you know, if I break it down, you talk about electricity, you talk about cool chain logistics, because even after producing the chocolate, you still have to distribute it. I'm moving it from, you know, place to place, from, you know, factory to the consumer, means you need cool chain infrastructure, which is not developed in Nigeria. I don't know, you know, across Africa, but in Nigeria, it's not that developed. So those were the main issues. I think for me, the base.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emmanuel. I mean, Ozo has talked about infrastructure, so I won't dwell on that. And when I think about it, I would say, like, the biggest challenge is really around demand, right? Even though we are producers of cocoa, we are not consumers of chocolate, right? And if you don't have, like, very strong local demand for something, you would always take it to where, because it's demand and supply. If you supply something and there isn't demand for it, your price is going to drop. But if there's a high demand for it elsewhere, you would always want to move it there, right? So for instance, in Europe, the per capita consumption of chocolate is about 9 to 10 kilograms per person. In America, it's about 4 kilograms per person. In Asia, it's over between like 1 to 2 kilograms. In Africa, is way below 1 kilogram. And the problem is poverty. So if I'm to crystallize it, I would say, you know, one of the major challenges really around like the poverty that exists that makes it really hard for us to, you know, have that local consumption, even though we have the human capacity or like the population base that would want to consume this product, right? That local demand doesn't exist. And if it does not exist, designing like that commercial viability around running the plant, creating chocolate for mass market based on the volume of cocoa that we produce becomes really, really hard. So I would say that's one of the biggest challenges, apart from all the infrastructural challenges that also exist.
So from my point of view, I don't know how to single out one issue, because the problem with the sector, the problem with that space is not one. You know, like my counterparts have said, there are a bunch of things. From my own angle, you know, when we're talking about financing, whether we are financing the aggregators of the cocoa or we're financing the producers of chocolates, we typically see challenges around the supply chain. And when I say challenges around the supply chain, we're looking at the supply of the beans. Yeah, because I mean, if we talk about power, yes, power is a problem, but we can fix power. We can get solar panels. We can get solar systems in place. But even when you do get those in place, you still cannot guarantee the supply of the beans. Fortunately, before Obianuji reached out to me for this, I was working on financing an aggregator of cocoa. And one of the problems that we had was we were seeing different qualities. And my position was, if you can't guarantee quality, I'm sorry, I'm not going to put money on the table. So we see that there's unreliable bean supply. The quality is inconsistent. And, you know, when you have these factories running, like Usomaka, I'm sure when she's running her factory, she cannot turn off her machines. She cannot afford to turn off her machines, because that means that she'll be losing money. So how do we fix the problems before it even gets to her to say, okay, I have beans to take me for the next 30 days. I have quality beans to take me for the next 30 days. You know, if we want to look at the demand side of things, we can export the cocoa. If Nigerians say they do, they are not eating we can export the chocolate. If Nigerians say they are not eating chocolate, we can export to neighboring countries. But if you don't solve the sourcing of the beans that the producers need, you're going to continue to have problems. And of course, even if you say Nigerians are not consuming so much, you want to supply or distribute your chocolates in neighboring countries, you still have issues with market access, and then you have issues with certifications, because this is a high value crop or high value product that we are talking about. Nobody's going to allow you bringing cocoa to their country that is not certified and confirmed solid or standard. You know, so from my point of view as a financier, these are the issues that are a problem. Another thing is the cost of capital. today we're lending monies at 30-35%, even up to 40%. If you're lucky, if you go to an MFB, you'll be getting monies at 60% per annum, which is about 5% per month. How many manufacturing businesses can really take on this cost? So from my point of view, these are the issues, and this is why it's difficult for me to say this is the biggest elephant in the room.
So, David.
Yes.
The three speakers spoke three different dimensions about issues and challenges that they encounter specifically. And obviously, this is a Nigeria-centric example. But it's a wider theme that you see across Africa.
The problems are the same.
The problems are the same. For example, when you walked in, I referenced the three garment factories, the tannery in Ondangwa, the abandoned garment factory in Nkurunkuru, and the questionable garment factory in Kiatmanshoop.
Yeah.
All three of those things, David, add value to a raw material, right?
Yeah.
The two garment factories can basically add value to cotton and various other particular kinds of textile products that come through from the agricultural sector. But here's the thing. There are factories that deal with the end product, you know, making the end product to the consumer.
I hear you.
But that's not even to the consumer directly. That's to a retailer, a supplier that has to buy from them, the factory, to dispense to the consumer.
I hear you.
Before them has to be someone that has to process the product, meaning when you as the cotton farmer, or let's say as a silk farmer, if you produce the raw material on your farm, someone has to buy the raw thing. Or let me use another easier one. Let's say it's sheep. See, sheep's wool. You've got sheep at your farm. You shear your sheep every 6 months.
Yeah.
That wool you sell to whoever buys the wool, because they have to go and purify, process, and wash the wool.
Yeah.
Because only then will I make, let's say, the hoodies, the jackets, the shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
There is someone missing, clearly. Now, obviously, I could see the gap in that report specifically back in last year when Helmut and I looked at that Xani Committee report that identified those three facilities by NIDA across the country.
Yeah.
Immediately, I could see these gaps because the Standing Committee people didn't ask the NIDA guys about how are you going to supply. Who's going to supply you, and who are you going to supply?
Yeah.
Because a factory is in a channel. Someone is selling you a raw material.
Yeah.
And you have to sell a product to someone.
Yeah.
Now, from the evidence, David, what we just heard now.
Yeah.
You said earlier, we have to industrialize.
No, it's a must, because that is the only pill that we are going to take comfortably. We know that it's going to cure us away. It's true.
No, it is. No, you are right.
You know, industrialization based on value addition and also owning the whole supply chain, that is the only pill that you are taking. You know, is going to cure you.
And remember, I'm not touching mining today.
No, we are not even going there. Yeah. Let's look at the aspect of agro-processing.
Yeah.
The thing about cocoa, as it has been stated, when you look at the countries such as it's Ghana, and it's Ivory Coast.
Yeah, there's one more, but they are slightly smaller, I think.
Yeah, I think Cameroon also have a part of it.
Yeah.
But looking at the global contribution of cocoa into the global market, they supply 70 to Africa contribute 70-75% to the global.
No, these guys basically said it's almost like almost 90%.
Look at what's happening now.
Yeah.
Then what is indicating is that ask yourself a question: when the price of cocoa go down, who determined the price? The price of cocoa is not being determined in Nigeria. It's not being determined in Ghana. It's not being determined in Ivory Coast.
You did see the attachments I sent you, no?
Yeah, I have seen.
Yeah.
Then I remember at the beginning of this year, I wrote something like related to that aspect when the price of cocoa declined in Nigeria. Then there has been a lot of discussion about the value addition. Why can't we come up with, factories? We are coming up with the production of chocolate and many other things. Then you own the market. But there has been question to say, there are key three companies.
Mondelez.
Two are in UK and one is in the United States of America.
You mean the manufacturing guys?
Yeah, the one that are receiving cocoa, the one that are buying, and the one that are determining the price.
Yeah.
And if I just have to look at part of the article I wrote at the beginning of the year, which is indicating that the main economic players purchasing large quantities of cocoa from Ivory Coast and the leading chocolate producer, we have Cadbury, we have Hershey, and Nestle Armajo Asset Management. Now, looking at what you have just stated, the supply chain, most of the chain is outside there. They are buying, but there are also those who are involved in logistics, just there outside Nigeria, outside Ghana, and outside Ivory Coast. Then they are doing business there. When they are determining the price, when you have a large supply of cocoa in the international market, or when the price of chocolate and other products, I think coffee also have some flavors of coffee being done from there. When those prices go down, they have to make sure that they protect their businesses first. And it's the same with the document that you sent me to say, it's only value addition. It's only local production that can save them. Because otherwise you will be selling something of value, but you don't determine the price of it. Then you just go home.
Well, they're already home. That's the funny.
No, then there is nothing that you can do, because the discussion of Africa not adding value, processing its product, it's not a new discussion.
Yeah,
we are just becoming too excited now. As I found you indicating to say, we are just having that new boost to say, this is exactly what you need to do.
Adrenaline rush for no reason.
Now, how can the Minister of Agriculture stand up and say, the only way to create the jobs, we are the main job creators in the sector, but the main way to create jobs is when we are having agro-processing and all these things. That one is already known. Even if you go back 15 years ago, who was the Minister of Agriculture by that time, they already knew.
15 years from now wasn't it Matorwa?
Maybe. I think Matorwa has been there for long,
There was someone that came after him. That was Lance.
Who was
that? Was when Lance was split from agriculture.
Who was replaced by Shetwin?
Schledwein.
Yeah, Schledwein, yeah.
Like now, recently.
Schledwein, yeah.
Schledwein was...
Yeah, Schledwein after... that is finance, man.
No, Schledwein came from finance, then became agriculture, then it was Hengari, he got locked up, and then it's Zamwani. That's the recent... But before Schledwein, it was... What was the guy's name, doch? I almost said Uester. It wasn't Uester. It was...
Not Narusev, but
yeah, because Narusev was literally that other ministry when lands and resettlement was separate from agriculture. Who was the other guy? But anyway,
The conversation is always to say what you need to do. We don't need a conference, Dwight.
No, we don't.
We don't need a conference to discuss what agriculture can do.
But why must you say we don't need? You and I, we like conferences because that's where we get all the content.
I don't have option. If you can invite me, to a green scheme,
that's why we have Anacleta there.
If you have to invite Anacleta on my behalf, to a green scheme, and you show them statistics, you show them all the agricultural graduates from University of Namibia, NUST, and Vervicia doing the job. You show all the, integration of artisan into the agricultural production. Then that I can be very happy. But if we need another conference on how to promote food security in Namibia, that's going to be a wasting of money. I'm going to tell you that
I'll watch it through a live stream.
Whether you live stream it or physically, it's going to be a wasting of money. Maybe it's going to be putting pockets in event organizer or maybe hotels.
It definitely will.
But in terms of long term, that is just...
The real message.
The real intention. It will not work out.
Yeah.
Because if you have...
It sounds more like we are describing the oil and gas because...
No. If you have summits that are more than industries, then you end up in the situation of Rwanda. If you take Rwanda 10 years ago... Wekagame said, no, man, this thing of...
conferences and
conferences. No, there was a lot of churches more than industries. I want to be understood very well.
Yeah.
Kagame stood up and said, no, guys, there must be something we're not doing right. If we have churches more than hospitals and more than schools, then we are not going. Why can't you guys unite, or why can't we agree to disagree?
Mm.
But let us look at the future. Where are we going to produce food? If you go, and a lot of people will kill me for this, you go to church from Monday to Friday, after service, you go and do community work and all these things. When are we going to get time to produce your own food?
Yeah.
When are we going to get time to show love to your kids?
Mm.
When are we going to get time to add value to your products? Because if your solution is another conference in the next 3 years, then we are not going to work. Because we have already described, for the past 36 years, we described all our strategies.
And all the problems.
All the problems.
And all the issues.
All the committees are there.
Yeah.
Some of them.
All the reports were generated.
Yeah. And we understand our problem. And which is quite a very good thing.
Yeah.
The best thing is that in that discussion of agro-processing, in that discussion of cocoa, in Namibia, we don't have cocoa. But what can we learn?
Yeah.
What can we learn from that? Where countries are arguing, and it's a good thing that you speak about percentage. Maybe they have increased in terms of production to say around 90% is coming from Africa. But how many African companies are final producer of the final products? Why can't you make chocolate in Nigeria? Just by the support of the Nigerian government?
But that's just what the second guy, Adi Agbo, explained. Adi Agbo explained, because the first lady, Uzo Amaka, she said, as a chocolatier, there are things in her realm of influence, like energy supply, electricity supply is an issue. And the supply, bringing the thing from her factory to the customer.
Yeah.
But then Adi Agbo went and said, it's not just, for example, a factory owner or the producer of the chocolate. It's for them as a aggregator of, spreading and selling the cocoa bean to the relevant customers, which have to produce or make value or make products from the cocoa bean. It's a question of developing local demand.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, David. Yeah. It's something that resonates specifically with us in Namibia. We are still being haunted. We don't make our own underwear. We don't make our own toothpicks.
Yeah.
Everything that I'm wearing here.
Now you want to make your own gold ring. How are you going to do it? Or you want to make? Why are we moving to nuclear power plant if we cannot make the product that you have just mentioned? And it's a reality. It's a good thing that you brought that up to say, if we cannot sit down and think, to say why should I import a toothpick from China or from South Africa? A toothpick.
Do you know what's the worst, David?
Mm.
Do you know what's the worst? And this is the thing that sort of like gave me a low blow.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about a low blow below my belt line.
Mm.
You know, the unsafe low blow.
Yeah, here.
2 years back, before President Geingob passed away, there was a gazetting of the exemption on sanitary pads for women.
Yeah.
That day, David, I walked into the local retailer here close by.
Mm.
I picked up one of those sanitary pads and I looked at, where does this thing come from?
Mm.
I looked at all the brands there. Kotex, Nina. Okay, Nina wasn't yet there.
Mm.
It was Kotex. It was Stay Free. It was Lilettes. It was... What was the other brand? There was another one. But there were like four of them on that shelf. I looked at everyone and I looked at, where do they come from? Where were they made? All of them made in China.
Yeah.
Made a sanitary pad, David.
You know, in the world that we are living in, there are some things that are even very sensitive to supply from outside. There are things that you cannot allow to do, because if you look at Iran, for example, you cannot supply military uniform to Iran. You understand? You cannot supply food to their military. No, just to give an example to where the world is going.
But my first question would have been why?
Because
besides the sanctions that are obvious. Yeah,
no, because they understand that some of the basic things that are closer to health, are closer to military capacity.
Yeah.
You need to feed yourself, you need to put clothes on yourself.
Yes.
They are making their own things.
They make their own cars. Do you know that? They have their own car.
There's nothing that they are not making.
They have two car companies.
You know, I was speaking to my friend who loves, you know, he's a historian and love, you know, history of weapons and what.
Yeah.
Then he was saying, you know, that these guys, they are military, they are not using, there's a former, what is it, official gun that you are using when you are at a parade like us, we have AK-47 and other new things.
No, in Namibia, we use the SKS. It's a former Soviet rifle. Yeah, it's not an AK.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the
guard? It's advanced.
No. Mm. It's an earlier version, but they both came out at the same time.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, let me not bore you, but yeah, let's first explain.
Yeah, what I indicate is that with them, they also advance. They use the formula of an AK-47, but they advance it to make sure that it's their own, their own products.
Mm.
They can use it in a regular engagement, but it's also operated as a sniper, and it's a very dangerous thing.
Mm.
That's why Mossad cannot go really directly in the thing. But what I want to indicate to you is that when you mention things such as basic things, those stage-free, those, sanitary pants, they are closer to our lovely girls so that they can...
They're closer to public health.
No, to public health. Yeah. So it's what I wanted to say. But if...
I don't know why you wanted to say lovely.
I'm trying to be a gentleman, man. Just leave me.
Okay. I'll tell Helmut, don't worry.
Yeah, I'm acting on his behalf.
Yeah.
But looking at that context, if you are not able to produce that, there is nothing that you can tell people.
Yeah.
If you are traveling to China, and it's not the wrong thing to say, you are wearing everything that they supply to you.
Mm.
Maybe you ate everything that they supply to you.
Mm.
You are on the transport system that they have designed.
Mm, that they have built.
You are safe because of the roads that they have designed.
Yeah.
And you are telling me you went to that engagement on a 50-50 discussion. You are not. You can't. It's not possible. It's not possible. Because they have... It's not only them. It's the whole world.
Yeah.
When you go to the world, what do we bring on the table? Are we only bringing...
Besides the raw material.
Before the raw materials.
And being present for the buffet.
Let's play a game to say you enter that negotiation with what you have, with what you produce.
Mm.
You'll be shocked, Dwight.
Mm.
Some people, we are not going to enter that. We are going to look like archaic.
No, we are.
And it's something that we should ask ourselves to say, when you go to Nigeria for a discussion, what is that we are bringing from Namibia?
Mm.
Okay, we are going with salt.
Mm.
Yes, we are going maybe with...
red meat, maybe.
Maybe with red meat.
But they have more red meat than us.
What are we wearing when we are going there? Are we going to wear skin?
Are we going to wear those cattle hides that we produce?
Maybe we are going to negotiate with our friends from the desert to say, no, just bring us that.
With the Tuaregs.
Yeah, because it's a critical question to us. If a toothpick is still being bought in US dollar, then we have a problem.
No.
We don't even need to speak about a machine. Just a basic to say, why can't we deal with these basics? There was a time, I don't know how complicated, maybe it was a political thing, I don't know. But there was a time Crepe Blue was producing fertilizer from...
Who's Crepe Blue?
Crepe Blue is an Ambient company.
The one at Ludred's?
Yes. Was producing fertilizers from
seaweed.
Seaweed.
Yeah.
And then they were selling to Belgium. They were selling to UK.
Yeah.
They were selling to, I think, German.
No, they were exporting.
They were exporting.
Yeah.
Then you know the problem is, there is still a trade in Namibia importing fertilizers from Russia, Ukraine, and many other areas.
No, it was political.
Then
we saw he wrote most of the opinion piece in our publication. I don't know if you remember last year, the guy from Kelp Blue.
Yeah. Then what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened is there was a problem of Namibia to say there is one apartheid law that is not allowing you to sell. That is not allowing you to sell locally. That is already telling you to say some of the things we may try to do them well. But there are still institutional problems that we have. There are still legal things that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
Then the company end up really not doing very well. And, you know, I say that now that Tateshanika is with a chamber of chambers of mines.
Mm.
But he was there. And they even got certification from NSI. NSI. Institution.
Yeah.
to sell, I think, to sell internationally. Then the question that we have is that sometimes we are our own problems. Sometimes we are our own problems because we do not want to work the way we are supposed to work in. But yeah, let's see what will happen.
We can always check what will happen, yeah. David, because that, even that Kelp story, when we, on the home run, we looked at that particular conversation, because that old law, that archaic, it's not actually a law. It's like a standard thing. Because all it says is, come and register your product. If you produce fertilizer, come and register it. So the application happened, but it was rejected because it's a new innovation that is 30 years after this thing that is the compliance law.
Yeah.
And this thing was never updated. This mechanism, the standard.
But some of the things, they just need the executive decisions. But why can't those things discuss at a high level to say, why should we continue to buy fertilizer with US dollars?
Because, David,
while we are producing at home.
Let's start from the starting point where, on that question that you're asking.
Yeah.
Let's start from the starting point where I said, We as Namibia, we are placing our hopes on green hydrogen for all our industrial jobs. Ne? We don't have legislation speaking to that industry. We don't have it.
Yeah.
When we asked 3 years back at the first green hydrogen conference, the second one, the discussion was of, we will have to see, but the question was slightly ignored. Even though Mr. Nyupe highlighted, you know, the green hydrogen legislation would form part of the Petroleum Act or the Relevant Minerals Act. But here's the thing, David. Green hydrogen production entirely, and ammonia, green ammonia production, is entirely manufacturing. There's nothing you're taking out of the ground. It's only the water that you're taking from the sea, the desalination plant, based upon their schematics.
Yeah.
But you're making something. You're not refining something.
Yeah, I hear you.
The concern from that, ne, is, unfortunately, Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, they now have to develop, or let me rather say, they have to wrap their heads around, how does industrialization form part of them?
I hear you.
How do they now have to think about industrialization, but also about extraction?
And we are a bit late. I think maybe we are going to catch up.
No, we are going to play catch up the whole time.
We have to play catch up because that is a very difficult question. Because if we speak at the conference about industrialization, about value addition, then 80% or 90% of the companies that are there, they are there for extraction. Then you have a bigger problem.
Or if 80% of the guys that can do the value addition and, let's say, the product enhancement and so on, are all foreigners.
And
you have a local beneficiation policy, which is just a policy, not a law, then how are you going to see the real benefits?
But I think it will also boil down to what I indicated the other day, the aspect of small state diplomacy. Because if you speak about small state diplomacy, you must know your vulnerability.
Is that from your Monday training, small state diplomacy?
No. That one I have been with it to say you don't have a leverage.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have a leverage when you are discussing with big powers. And big powers maybe...
It's also what the South African guy said.
Yeah, we do not have a leverage. And this thing must come very clear to make them understand, to say, guys, for a very long time you have been our friends. You took millions of people out of poverty. Either there's nobody who is exception. All our international partners, either it's EU, either it's China, either it's South Africa itself, these big brothers of us, we have our own thing to do with them, to say, you took these people out of poverty. But have you ever go back and ask ourselves, what is Namibia doing? Because we are your friend. what is my friend doing?
Mm.
Because if you ask that question, maybe it will change the way we negotiate.
Yeah.
Because most of the things we do not, if you negotiate on a mutual beneficial relationship, if you negotiate on a 50-50, to say it's a win-win situation, ask yourself who win.
Mm.
Let me come back to the topic of Coco.
Mm.
If what they have indicated that they supply 90% to the global production of Coco, ask yourself a question. Why are they not determining the price? That is number one. Number two, why are they not determining the final output of their products? And you also ask yourself a question to say, those key three companies that are dominating the trade and also the production of products out of cocoa, how much are they making?
Yeah.
And number two, how many people are employed? You have a company, which is a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
A company which is in a different country owning the production of raw material from a completely different country that they do not not produce.
Mm.
But you know, when you look at those our brothers from Nigeria, when you look at our people from Ghana and Cameroon and Ivory Coast, most of them, they are still looking like our small-scale farmers.
Mm. No, they are. They are smallholder farmers.
No, they still look like our small-scale miners to say. There is no value. When you are looking at them, they are not looking like people that are holding the global production.
The true value of the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, because that is just what
they are the origins of this gold.
But can it be, if we have to look at other countries, have we ever owned the final output of anything that is being produced from outside?
Can I describe to you a picture of that cocoa industry?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the links in that PDF document is a link to the International Cocoa Organization, the Secretariat.
Mm.
It has an African office.
Yeah.
Guess where?
Mm-hmm. Where?
Abidjan.
Okay.
Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
But if you read why it was established, it was established in 1973 under the guidance of the UN, based on the international cocoa agreements.
Yeah.
So since 1973, Africa knew already about cocoa's strength and its global importance.
Mm.
But here's the even more peculiar thing that they do, David, which also supports the point that you made about who determines the price, who determines the consumption, who determines where the thing has to be produced or used and in what scenario.
Mm.
On their website, where the reports are,
the
section where the reports are, there are daily cocoa prices.
Yeah.
For a ton of cocoa on the London futures.
Yeah.
London futures.
I hear you.
As of 26 August, that was yesterday, a ton of cocoa will get you £4,300 per ton. On the New York futures, this was dated at 6 July, because they are using the 2nd and the 6th July prices that were established on the New York futures exchange. A ton of cocoa will get you $5,924 in London, £4,300 per ton, and in New York, $5,924 per ton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the funny thing:
mm-hmm.
there's an office
mm-hmm.
in Cote d'Ivoire.
Yeah,
they purposefully already shipped the product somewhere else for the price to be set there.
Yeah.
So once again, it's that similar thing like the blue kelp story.
Yeah.
You know, we are shooting ourselves in the foot. No, we're not bringing the price determinant here.
Yeah.
We are allowing it for it to be set somewhere else.
Mm.
A funny thing is also, they held a conference earlier this year in February.
Yeah.
Guess where?
Mm.
Switzerland.
Oh my goodness.
They held a conference in Switzerland.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing that serves into Adeyagbo's cocoa description.
Mm.
If you ask the question, who are the biggest consumers of cocoa or chocolate in this world?
Mm.
Which countries consume the most chocolate in this world?
Mm.
They are all European.
Mm.
For example,
mm.
the first one is, and the metric is kilograms per year.
Yeah.
How many kilograms does a person in a specific country eat per year chocolate? Norway comes in at number 8 with the average amount of chocolate eaten in a year by a person in Norway, by a Norwegian, is 5.2 kilograms per year.
Hey, you.
It's a lot of, it's that a lot of.
Just average.
The average.
You have the Syria eaters.
The largest brand consumed in Norway is Freya, which is a Mondelez brand. The largest local producer of a chocolate product in Norway is the Kvik Lunch wafer bar, and their market size as of 2025 is $1.1 billion.
Yeah.
If you go to the next country, Sweden, which is number 7, they've got 5.4 kilograms per person, average what per person eats in that country.
Yeah.
Their top brand is Marabou, also a Mondelez brand. They have a cultural ritual in terms of where, how they, oh, sorry, no, that thing that I explained earlier also under Norway is a cultural ritual, you know, something that peaks chocolate consumption, like Christmas or Easter, something like that.
Okay.
So in Sweden, they've got a cultural activity where chocolate purchases happen the most around, known as Fika.
Yeah.
This is a daily coffee and a chocolate bread.
Yeah.
So it's a specific cultural event around that.
Yeah.
Market growth has seen plus 3% year on year. They don't say what's the market value like with Norway. You get into Ireland, coming in at number 6, 5.9 kilograms per person per year. Top brand is Cadbury, which is the dominant brand.
Yeah.
The heritage specifically for Ireland is that Cadbury Ireland has been operating since 1932, so they have established market presence.
No, so that's the dominant, one of the dominant I have mentioned.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Seasonal peak when chocolate is consumed and bought the most in Ireland is Easter, because the Republic of Ireland is predominantly Catholic. So it sees every year plus minus 35% more chocolate being consumed. You get into position number 5, the UK, also Cadbury. In the UK, they eat 6.9 kilograms per year of chocolate per person. Main brand, Cadbury Dairy Milk. Market value for the UK, £5.6 billion in 2025. The largest consumption period is around Christmas, when 29 million units of chocolate was sold in a Christmas, just for 1 week.
Yeah.
29 million units are being sold or sold. You get into Austria. Now we get into the big guys.
Yeah.
Austria is in number 4, 6.6 kilograms per year. For a population of 6 million people, they eat 6.6 kilograms of chocolate per year.
Yeah.
Largest brand is Manner since 1890. Signature particular product that they've got there is known as the Mozart Kugel Praline. And overall, Austria owns the UNESCO Intangible Heritage label for chocolate consumption and use. You get into Belgium, number 3.
Yeah.
Belgium has 6.3 kilograms per year, but Belgium has 2,000 plus small businesses that make chocolate. This is the unique thing about them.
Yeah.
Production is 270,000 tons of chocolate per year. Belgian chocolate manufacturing, meaning what you make there in your kitchen as a small business owner, is a UNESCO status since 2024.
Yeah.
You then get into number 2, Switzerland, 7 kilograms per year per person. Global brands include Lindt, Toblerone, and Nestle. What they created or contributed to the chocolate industry was milk chocolate developed by Daniel Peter in 1875. They've got 18 major manufacturers that come from Switzerland.
Yeah.
And finally, the big kahuna, who's also in our economy, is Germany.
Yeah.
Germans consume 8.1 kilograms of chocolate per year. David,
hey, you.
They've got top brands, Rittersport, Milka, and Lindt. Market value is 5.4 billion euros. And the innovation that they've contributed to the chocolate market is that they are the largest organic chocolate market in Europe. Meaning, the thing as it comes from the plant.
No, I hear you.
Not any funny science is taking place.
No, I hear you. Then where is Africa in that?
Zero.
Where is Nigeria?
Zero. Where is South Africa? Zero.
Where is Cameroon?
Zero.
Ivory Coast?
Zero. Nobody. Not even Egypt.
And that is the painful part.
Yeah.
If you look at just at an individual level, at any point in time, people are falling in love in Europe. There is a chocolate on the table.
Even here, we are also falling in love here.
No.
We are also falling in love here.
No, at any point in time, somebody wants to apologize or there is a birthday party.
Yeah.
People are buying chocolates. Those are just at an individual level.
Yeah.
You spoke about festivals. We speak about branding. We speak about companies being established. Then you also speak about within those festivals, remember that you have also jobs such as performers.
Yeah.
You have organizers and many other things that you have to do.
Mm.
Now take one farmer, small scale farmer of cocoa in either it's in Nigeria or either it's in Ivory Coast.
Mm.
Let him watch what is happening with just product. Things that he's carrying here.
With his product.
And he's not even looking like a human being. It's not an insult. Yeah. When those guys are coming from that farm, they are dark. They are very tired and they just want to survive.
Mm.
They just want to sell that kilo so that they can survive. Then let them look at what is his contribution to the world.
Mm.
Now, the question that you should ask is that, is the system he's operating in allow his contribution to be valued to the world? If you look at, let me give you one example. One of my uncle is a former fisherman.
Mm.
And there is one thing that is always telling me to say. He has been in the sea for over 20 years. That is the only known job that he knows. Yeah. Now, when these things came about, the fish rot and other things, he said, no, man, you know, we produce a lot of metric tons, not tons of fish. But look at what we are paid. Look at the treatment that we are getting.
Mm.
There is no place that he traveled. He went to Spain. He went where. Then he thought by then he was getting more money.
Mm.
Then he just realized that when he started understanding the whole industry of fishing, they started realizing that, nah, man, this is not even peanut and butter. It's just butter on its own. It's not even peanut.
Mm.
Which means that you are not being
valued
as to your contribution.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that even if you have to put that on the scale, it's not even 1% of what you do.
Mm.
Because what you have meant is a very good thing that that statistical analysis is presented there on the table. The question is that where are the statistics of Africa?
Mm.
Because that will automatically tell you that Africa is only contributing to the well-being of the world.
Mm.
But its operational system which is operating in is not allowing the people to contribute.
Mm.
That is evident to say without Ivory Coast, without Nigeria,
without Ghana,
how many companies are going to be closed outside? Just how many? Just of 1 month of no production of cocoa.
Mm.
But here is an interesting thing. You have been doing good research on GMO, genetically modified products, and all these things. Technology will catch up with you. Mm. Technology has an advantage and disadvantage.
Mm.
If you continue depending on raw material without building your industries, somewhere, somehow, somebody is busy making sure that there is a fertile land in Germany, for example, or in the UK, for example, to make sure that they replicate what they are doing.
Mm.
Because they also know that in the long term, they're also going to be another global demand of cocoa.
Yeah.
Somebody is genetically modifying cocoa for now, or maybe it's already modified.
It is already.
Yeah. To make sure that it survive in various environments.
That's
why your organic thing cannot stand the ground of debate anymore.
Yeah.
It's like a chicken, marathon chicken competing with Bray Park. They are not winning. Marathon, even if they are marathon chicken. No, it's not winning. You can prove me wrong. Are they winning? Yeah.
No, they're not.
We're not winning. No, yes, it's organic, but these guys, they are using technology. They are more advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you are not going to win that war, especially when somebody is already advanced than you.
The other concern, David, is a good thing that you mentioned the scientific component. Currently what's happening, and I've been looking at this thing for a long time.
Mm.
So in Europe, they are researching how to replace red meat.
Yeah.
And since Namibia is now loving selling red meat to Europe and exporting red meat, the Europeans will look to internalize and literally cut away from buying red meat products specifically from Africa and from South America.
Yeah.
The concern has been, we've been enjoying that imbalance between our currencies. Specifically, you get more money for per kilogram in euros.
Yeah.
When you convert that euro into Namibian dollars.
Yeah.
But what happens if that euro just goes and says, you know what, guys, I don't want to buy your meat anymore.
Yeah.
We are now eating insects and, you know, and all that.
Mm.
Yes, David, they are, there's an insect farm in the Netherlands.
No, you told me the story. I think
and the BBC person even goes there and says, yeah, could this be the future food? I'm like, you eat that rubbish. You eat the insect.
No, they will market it properly. You know how.
You won't even know when you fly there that you're eating an insect burger.
I don't want to insult people, ne? you know how the business of seafood was well marketed.
Yeah.
It's like the same with the business of sushi.
Yeah.
One of my cousin loves sushi so much, and I look at it, I say, ah, yes, maybe it's your thing.
Mm.
But I think it's sometimes it's just about branding and marketing.
Yeah, it is.
If Messi start eating that on a marketed platform. The marketed, gig or Cristiano Ronaldo, you see the whole world eating insect.
Yeah.
You see, it just depends about the marketing. But what we are indicating, and as we have mentioned, apart from what we produce, let us look at economic scenarios. Things will always change.
Mm.
Friendship will end.
Mm.
Have you seen the statement from Eswatini and China?
Mm. About the zero tariff thing.
No. They just released a statement to say we are not going to fold because of international difference in terms of foreign policy. Mm. Because they are not talking much due to that Taiwan thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying friendship can end tomorrow. Technology can advance. New friends will be found.
Yeah.
But the question is that if you depend both of your legs on the global market, and you are not influencing anything, you'll be controlled.
Yeah.
Sometimes I also start thinking, sometimes we are blaming too much our politicians. Maybe it's the best they can do for survival.
Mm.
Maybe we need to come to an understanding to say, what is that we can do? Because
And then you get a Dwight that asked, like, former Minister Alwindo back in 2023.
Yeah.
No, 2022, when I asked him, but Minister, why are we exploring for oil? And because I was asking the question about, doesn't this make us look weird?
Mm.
We are promoting green industries, but we are happy to find oil. Why does this? And then he said, well, and this was for the whole country, David.
Mm.
This is for the whole country. He said, well, the same people that want us to follow green industries are the same ones that are buying up all the oil in the world because of that Ukraine conflict.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes it's not when you look at our politicians, sometimes maybe we are putting too much pressure on them. They are also in a complicated system. It's true. Maybe it's the best they can do because you know why I'm saying this. You see somebody who is Dwight, know things in and out, can do research and all these things. You understand the game when you go to the board, to the boardroom, and you understand how tables are working.
Mm.
But when you go there, you start to say we are consulting. you also start to think that it's going to be a win-win. We are still talking to our partner to do all these things. Maybe sometimes it's a complication of the system.
Yeah.
To see, can you really find a leader who does not want his people to benefit?
Yeah.
Sometimes we just do not know, or the system is not allowing it, or there is somebody who is between our good intention and also what the world has been taking for granted from us.
Mm.
Maybe there's somebody between that. That's why the issue of a capitalist nigger, and it's not a bad word. It's actually used in the economy to say we are all enslaved. Né?
Mm.
Then I got the privilege to work in the kitchen. No, that's a privilege. You are at the plantation.
I'm laughing because it's a reality. Yeah.
I'm at the. We are all at the plantation, eh?
Yeah.
Sugar plantation. We are all enslaved. But I got that small ring elevation to say you are at the kitchen. You know where food are produced. You have access to food and all these things.
Yeah.
And you can also hear interesting conversation when the masters are talking.
Yeah.
Then anything that you are going to talk about when you are at the plantation.
Mm.
I'm going to automatically run to the master to tell them to say you are trying to escape. But what I'm trying to say is that in a system where the world, the continent of Africa is being revolutionized, or the new leaders are really thinking about what they can do better.
Mm.
There is always those who think, if I benefit as David, then I just need to go to my farm.
Yeah.
Then I buy my Porsche. Then I have a flat in Dubai. Then I'm done.
Yeah.
Then I pull out of the conversation. And those people, they become so problematic, because few people will benefit and that will also worsen the life of a lot of people.
True.
Yeah, that's why sometimes you can have a good leadership, you can have really good intention, but you have few individuals that they grab that opportunity of getting 0.1% of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Then they think they got everything. Then we are out.
Yeah.
Because I really believe that the possibility for all of us to be wealthy in the country is still there, although it looked like an imaginary thing, or just a possibility for us to have a better life. Not really to say there's no way everyone is going to be rich. To have a better life is still there. The possibility for us to be a leader in the industry is still there.
Mm.
But what we need to do is just a reduction into summits and conference. Then start practical things.
Yeah.
To say, let's look at what we have said already.
Let's take stock. Let's see what we can turn into action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you look at, for example, the SDG, for example, when you look at what we have discussed, you start seeing that there are movements in all the goals, but there is no really clear direction on how are we going to succeed in that aspect.
Yeah,
and you can ask yourself to say, is it really very, very difficult to turn around a country of 3 million? With a deposit of all kinds of minerals, with a sea for that matter, and with a youth population which is educated, is it really that going to take us another 20 years? That is a question that we should ask ourselves. The same question Nigerians are discussing now about
cocoa.
The same way Ivory Coast is
discussing
about cocoa. Yeah.
There is a shortcut.
Yeah.
But the shortcut, and this is where your expertise falls in as a political scientist. The shortcut...
Don't give me ranks, man.
...comes through
the
military.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I point out the military is, remember what you said earlier about Iran, for example, where there are certain things that has to be sourced from locally.
Yeah.
Now, it's the same thing you would find in Germany. It's the same thing you would find in Russia. You'd find it in the US. You'd find it in the UK. You'd find it in France. Certain things has to be sourced from locally.
Yeah.
And local sourcing for them is basically procurement, local procurement on a level of it's like on steroids. It's ugly.
Yeah.
Because this means there are companies that sell to the military company. Let's, for example, say like August 26 in a Namibian context. Your company, you produce a specific kind of a bullet, and you sell it to August 26, and August 26 then supplies the army, because the army then procures it from August 26.
Yeah.
However, this funny business that we have here in Namibia, you know, the noise that has happened the couple of years around August 26. You know
what? Is it France or who asked that question?
About?
But why August 26 is producing clothes? Why it was supposed to produce? Why other people are already producing drones? Somebody asked that question. Maybe it's a good starting point to say.
It is a good starting point
to say if you are producing clothes.
But here's the thing: if you look at it, look, there's nothing wrong for them producing clothes.
Yeah.
It's the kind of clothes.
Yeah.
If it's uniforms for the army. Yes, for the Navy.
Then it's a good start.
Then it's a good start. If it's uniforms for the Army, for the Navy, for the Air Force of Namibia,
for
the police of Namibia.
Just if you start with security, then you are safe.
No, you will see industrialization flourish.
And this is it's a good point that you start, to start with that. Because if you cover the security part, then you are safe.
Yeah.
But if I have to chase poachers, no, I'm just giving an example. I have to chase poachers in Etosha.
Yeah.
wearing the uniform made from their country, having the gun made from their country.
The boots made from their country.
No, even the binoculars I'm using.
Comes from their country.
I'm not going to win.
You're not.
Yeah, because they are just toots. They don't need to be sophisticated.
Even the fence is made from their country.
No, they don't need to be too sophisticated. Ne? They just need to be two steps ahead of me. Then they are done.
Yes.
Yeah, because That is a good point that you brought, especially with security, to say, are you safe? Mm. Even the food that you ate, the toothpick that you ate, is from their country.
Yes, David. Just to add on to the Iran example, let's zone in on the most important thing around security.
Mm.
Let's say weapons, weapons and ammunition.
Yeah,
it's a good thing that you mentioned like the Iran example because. Mm. Every time I've looked at like these parades that happen on TV or on that are broadcast by the national broadcaster, or when I see the police here in the center of town. But before we actually continue, we'll come back right after the short break.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just be more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So coming back, dear listeners, here to the Home Run, welcoming you if you've just joined. If you are as a listener, you know, just mulling about in your drive time session, you can call in and say hello. We'll also just say back hello. Please don't come and pick a fight with David. Please.
Because I was born ready to fight. You know that I was named after a combatant. But that's the thing for
David. You've got a Bible name. That's what that's what everybody would say with the name David.
Yeah, but I have a combat name also. I don't want to use. But
okay.
It's fine.
Okay, okay.
So where were we?
Yeah. So if let's for example zone in on that Iran discussion.
Yeah.
So I sometimes look at our army, the police, even the correctional services guys. And then I look at the firearms.
Yeah.
And then all the firearms are Soviet Union variants.
Yeah.
Remember when you mentioned the AK variant that I identified as a SKS?
Yeah.
So the SKS was a semi-automatic rifle that was produced just before the Second World War ended, but just after it as well.
Yeah.
And then you obviously had the AK.
Yeah.
And just for our listeners to know, the AK-47 does not exist anymore. Please, guys. The variant you see today is the AKM. It's from the 1960s this way. And in many cases, the most common variant of the AKM is the Chinese and the Czechoslovakian.
But I think everybody got the hybrid from the main version of AK-47.
Yeah, because obviously the countries that were socialist and communist, you know, the Soviets exported the gun to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then those guys decided, you know what, let's go and clone the gun mm-hmm. with a few more additions, or we adapt it to our standards.
Yeah.
And that's why you got the AKM Yugoslav variant, the AKM Czechoslovak variant, there was a Polish variant, then you got a Chinese variant, then you got a Cuban variant even.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Cubans also copied the AKM rifle. But anyway, besides that particular scenario, however, in all those instances I just mentioned now, David, all those countries decided, let's make our own. What is the proverbial phrase that I grew up with on high school? Our own toa. Literally, I don't know what the teenage guys my age did by replicating the sound twa instead of just saying gun. So they made their own guns.
Yeah.
Now, here is the thing happening in the world. There is one country, David, dominating the 9mm and 5.56 caliber variant, the bullet sizes. I'm mentioning the bullet sizes.
Yeah.
In this world.
Mm.
So I'm gonna ask you to guess. Just throw any name.
Just the US direct guns.
It's not the US.
What is it?
It's Germany.
Germany, ne?
Germany in World War II invented the 5.56 variant.
Yeah.
The gun that you mentioned, the AK-47, is based off of a German gun, the STG-44, known as the Sturmgewehr 44. The Sturmgewehr was the first assault rifle in modern warfare. So they developed the bullet size. The Germans had standardized, or the Americans adopted it as well, the 9mm, because it's known as the 9mm Luger that we are using every day. The Germans standardized the 9mm as well.
Yeah.
So two commonly used bullet variants. Now you want to tell me, Namibia cannot copy and paste gunpowder and how to make a bullet and then how to make a gun? You want to tell me that, Helmut? David?
There is nothing that you can't do.
Exactly. There's nothing we cannot do.
Apart from selling our official guns to SA, there's a lot of things that we can do. No. There's a lot of things that we can do. Because you always run out, né? Because the somebody who always receive, you don't have power. There is that thing to say the giver. There is a proverb, man, to say the giver will always have something to give.
Yeah.
But if you are always receiving.
Yeah.
The example of chasing a poacher is interesting because you think you are chasing a poacher, but it's exposing where you are because they already have advanced. They already know what you have, and it's a vulnerable position. It's not only about guns. It's not only about security. It's all about everything. When Namibian students go to international platform, somewhere somehow they are underestimated. Because they don't, they contribute less. The books they are using
is out of date,
or they are using books from that side.
Yeah,
their economy is this side. The food they are eating, it might come from their country, but they don't finalize it. Yeah, that's why it's a very dangerous position. That's why sometimes I'm saying sometimes we corner our politician too much, but maybe they also promise us the heaven and earth. We corner them too much, but there are things that we can really do. Because if you speak about food, for example, we can finalize those final products with food. Basic things, sanitary pens, toothpicks. Let's deal with the basics.
Making clothes.
Yeah, making clothes, uniforms.
Selling it locally.
Making
we don't
clothes,
have to export.
Sell them locally and market them locally.
Yeah.
If it requires Namibia to pay a lot of money to take or to... to use a celebrity to market its local brand, that would be fine.
Yeah.
If it had to take, you know what Namibia Breuil did with Didier Drogba?
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Yeah. If it had to be like that.
But it's not like...
It's not a bad thing.
It's not like Didier came and made us drink more Van Duc Brew.
Yeah, but it's also to give a picture, an image. Yeah. We can even look at Cristiano Ronaldo. That is a good gamble. Just for example.
That can be expensive.
Oh, Yamal. Okay, let's take Yamal. let's take Yamal.
But you can't put Lamine close to alcohol.
Let's talk about clothes.
Okay.
Yamal wearing Namibian made clothes. Let's market this to the world.
Yeah. And then you can market it to Spain.
You can market it to Spain and people will get that picture. Yeah. But if we are still moving in this circle, this will not assist us.
Yeah.
It will make us hate each other. The rich will be hated by the poor.
Mm.
The politician will be hated by the citizens.
Mm.
The student will be very angry with their parents.
Mm.
But there are things that we could do better to say for the society to get in order. Somewhere, somehow,
I think
the problem must be...
I think Drogba is also Muslim in a way.
Ne?
I suspect so. You doubt it?
He's a Catholic guy.
He's Catholic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's from Ivory Coast. Yeah, he's predominantly Catholic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you were saying, yeah.
Yeah, I was just indicating to say if we can fill that gap of the basics, if the aspect of value addition, even if you're not talking about mining today, mining should not be out of the picture, but why can't we deal with the basics?
Mm.
To say, let us look at ourselves. You know, I like referencing Luvidao.
Mm.
You know, Luvidao is somebody who surprised me also in what she does. One of the things she mentioned at the recent summit is at...
Which summit?
The one for the CDC. Summit which was held in Namibia.
Yeah.
One of the things that she mentioned is that collaboration and coordination is the main thing when we are in the system of fighting various diseases and the pandemics. And said... gone are the days that Africa continue to buy what it can produce.
Mm.
It's not about, and if you read that, I think it was a well-written speech.
Mm.
Somebody who can read between the lines is that it's not that Africa should not buy from the international market. It's that Africa should not buy what it can produce at home.
Mm.
And that's it's a very interesting thing. If it's about medication, to say, if Rwanda has a factory of coming up with medicine, why can't we collaborate with Rwanda?
Yeah.
Then we can deal with that.
Or with South Africa that has all the labs.
Yeah, then we can import what we can import. It's not like we have to cut ourselves out of the international market.
But even the thing, even in that, what you're suggesting, there is already a price tag that you are saying yes to. Because you are obviously negotiating government to government to say, hey, listen, South Africa, since you have all the pharmaceutical labs, because you have established the ecosystem, let's pay you a nominal fee.
Yeah.
And then you produce what we want locally
in an
African context.
Yeah.
All it has to do is that truck has to just drive across the Orange River on a regular basis.
Mm.
So that we don't end up buying condoms and medicine from India and China that has to fly 20,000 kilometers for no reason.
You know, we are in a very vulnerable position. Look,
even the condoms come from another continent.
No, look now that what when your citizens are busy, they are busy with things that they don't produce, and that is not, and to other countries an insult.
Yeah,
other countries an insult. Even grabs.
Even Cuba produces some sort of a petrochemical product.
No, and you mentioned a very interesting product. And maybe if you mention them, people will start also to think deeply.
Mm.
To say, if somebody produced toothpick for you, somebody produced plate that we are using, somebody produced...
bottling and glass.
Yeah.
Can you believe we still don't have a glass company?
Somebody producing toilets for you.
And I'm not talking about making windows.
Yeah.
Glass.
Yeah.
Glass cups.
And somebody producing, like you said, condoms.
Yeah. Ceramics.
And you are telling me that out of all those things, we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Then you have a big problem. Then you ask yourself a question to say, whose market are you?
Yeah. Do you know that I went and looked up, do you know these tin cups that you find that the farmers use?
Mm.
It's not actually tin.
Mm.
Do you know that it's enamel?
Yeah.
Enamel is this thing that your teeth is made from.
Yeah.
Do you know where you get the raw material from?
Yeah.
Soil. Like glass.
Mm-hmm.
Glass, you just heat glass and then you make glass.
Yeah.
You can heat glass. You can heat soil and then you can make enamel.
Mm.
David, we have the resource here in our backyards. Wherever we see it, there's ground, there's soil everywhere. But in 2026, there's no Namibian that has yet come up with a glass manufacturing company.
No, I hear you.
There's a lady I know. She's an artist.
Yeah.
She's a qualified architect.
Yeah.
Her One of her daughters is an architect as well, a practicing architect. Mm. She's an architect. I interviewed her back in 2019 in my other career. Mm. She showed me how she makes pottery, you know, like clay pots and stuff. She has her own technology in her backyard, you know, to make arts and crafts. The downside is I could immediately see from an industrial eye point, why haven't we duplicated this woman's skill on an industrial level to make clay products that you can sell in shops?
You know that you are making a point that that will change the whole system. If you want to industrialize in that sector, you know what you need to do.
Mm.
Go to, you know, this artist that we don't value so much. This artist that they sell products to tourists.
Yeah.
There's nothing that they can do.
Mm.
If you just give them money, if you just give them opportunity, then you have your whole standing industry, because they may be making ceramics, but they are making only to their own for their own survival.
Mm.
But have you tried to look into those guys and say, let us produce and market at a regional level?
Mm.
There is a lot of artists from Kavango, from Zambezi,
mm.
particularly those who are making just things for tourists.
Mm.
Some are using their own hands. But if you say, what machines can you have so that you can produce at a larger scale?
Yeah.
Then you can supply the local market. The US dollars that we are using, you will see changes that are coming in our market, because that is local production at a bigger scale.
Mm.
When Africa Continental Free Trade Area comes, then many of our people will be able to benefit from that. But if you are just here and we are discussing those things and you continue to use almost everything from outside,
yeah,
then me as a kitchen nigger, I would be very happy to get that peanut. And I can sell the whole thing.
David, I'm sorry. David, you have to put up a sign saying, Dwight, this term is coming. Guys, I apologize for being caught off guard.
And me being in that kitchen, I think, I don't even think about other people. I think it's only me.
Mm.
And we are not going to work, Dwight. We are not going to work.
We're not, David, yeah. Because I have also realized there's something that we suffer from in specifically like the smaller nations that you highlighted, the guys with no leverage.
Yeah.
There's something we suffer from. It is sometimes perceived as laziness.
Yeah.
But we're not really lazy.
Yeah.
It's just like we don't see the motivation.
Yeah.
I mentioned here enamel cups, bullets, guns, clothes, sanitary pads, toothpicks, underwear, basic clothing. You know, these are all things that you can go and experiment and play around in your backyard. It doesn't matter where you are.
Mm.
If you're an individual, you can go and find some things and just make a fire, you know, see or get a machine and try it and try to play around. The downside is there really someone standing close by and saying, here, David, I will incentivize you. Let's take your idea. Let me pay you for your idea.
Mm.
And then we commercialize that idea. And then we roll it out with an effective marketing campaign, which is an effective advertising strategy, so that they bring the money here to us, Eagle FM.
Mm.
You know? And then...
definitely.
Because it's advertising. We're part of the industry.
Yeah, definitely.
And... if you roll it out, you know, you just advance it a little bit more, you literally manifest local beneficiation and local content policy.
Mm.
But now, Namibia has this tendency, and I'm talking about Namibia specific, but we have this tendency of reaching for the stars.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be at the big table, but remember your reference of, but what are you bringing to that big table? We want to be at the big table, but we are constantly being led like a toddler to the table by an adult. You know, there's always this adult leading us. If it's not South Africa through SACU, then it's Germany through the EU. Or it's China leading us to another big table.
Mm.
Now the US wants to lead us here with oil and gas to a big table somewhere.
Mm.
Why are we being led to big tables? Why don't we develop the big table?
Can we create the table?
We can create the table.
Can we create the table?
We can.
Yeah, because...
we don't have to manufacture cars, né?
Yeah.
Just letting you know.
No, there is a lot of things that we do not need to do.
Yeah.
You know, what we have now, and it's a reflection on the analysis of UN. and the report that you gave me, and also to look at where we are in terms of SDG, is to say we are biting every apple.
Oh.
Yeah, we are biting every apple to make sure that we reach
or that we cover all
what the world wants us to get into.
Yeah.
But you don't understand, do we really need apple, or we need to eat meat for now?
Yeah.
Or we need
protein,
or we need carbohydrate, or maybe we need just a bread.
Yeah. What
a bread?
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you said castle bread.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was close.
Because that is one thing that we need to look into, to say, why are we biting all the apples?
Yeah.
And why do we like pressing people? Maybe we should also get away from this to say, the most dangerous thing to do as a human being is to praise people.
Mm.
Because it's good for their emotions. It's good for maybe keeping temporary friendship, but it will destroy you. Because for so long we praised the world, and the world praised us too.
Mm.
But did we do what we want for ourselves? For so long we have been selling so much to the world. For so long we have been celebrated in various records.
Mm.
We have been getting more Ibrahim Prize awards here and there. Our leaders have been recognized.
Let's please recognize that, David. That's our leaders that got the prize, not Namibia got the prize.
Yeah, but they got the prize based on what they did when we are also here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And wasn't that usually governance?
Yeah, that is an aspect of governance.
Yeah.
But just to look at where we are, where we celebrate our press freedom, which is, and all many other things.
Yeah.
But did we really ask ourselves to say, are we happy as a people? Are we happy with our future?
Are we satisfied?
Are we satisfied as a people? Because now we are so exhausting. After 36 years, we are so exhausted now. To say, no, guys, we have been celebrated around the world, but we are not celebrating ourselves.
Mm.
That's why the president mentioned that our enemies now is unemployment. Our enemy now is not the one which are holding guns.
Mm.
These are the reality on the ground that are facing us.
Mm.
And those were supposed to be the main enemy that we're supposed to face after we come from the bush.
Mm.
But maybe it's an opportunity now that we are discussing this issue to say there is nothing that cannot be changed.
Yeah.
And that's only require not only a discussion, but it's only require practical changes. There is nothing really that cannot change.
Yeah.
That we look into cannot change.
I mean,
yeah.
The obvious current or major development, David, is the AI discussion, which is not subsiding.
Mm.
Even though AI, in the major AI market that is actually driving AI, is falling flat on its face because it's now hacking all kinds of companies, or it is apparently going rogue for some reason. We obviously see that the next industrial revolution is 10 years outside of Namibia's particular capabilities.
Hmm.
We obviously have to understand, what can we fix now so that we basically sort out all the deficiencies that we've been suffering from for the past 36 years? Because the deficiencies are still there.
I hear you.
I mean, like you said, we were supposed to, after, you know, achieving independence, we were supposed to immediately mobilize into an immediate plan of action.
Before we started playing with the big boys.
That is true.
And I think we were convinced to say, if we are on the table, we are part of the table.
Mm.
But we forgot that we were also dinner.
We were part of the meal.
we're part of the meal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you look at the industrialization. One beautiful thing about civilization is that there is no specific time which is given that you can develop. You can develop in 10 years. You can develop in 20 years. Some people took 100 years or 200 years.
Mm.
But the thing about the change in terms of civilization is that we must be good at ignoring some of the things.
Mm.
Because with technology, there is a lot of distraction.
Yeah.
With the new machines, with efficiency, there's a lot of distraction. But there was never a study which was done. And if that study is done, it has to be done in Namibia and South Africa.
Yeah.
There was never a study which was done to look at the impact of either is technological changes to highly unequal countries in the world, or even the impact of industrialization to highly unequal country, or to countries that have highest inequalities, such as Namibia, South Africa, and you look at other aspects, because you may develop sectoral, or you might develop with only a certain portion of the society.
Mm.
Why others become the casualty of that development? Because if that study was done, it must be done in Namibia, it must be done in South Africa, it must be done in DRC. Because if you are at the highest peak of inequality in the world, then people must understand us.
Why are we there? Yeah,
that's why we are always giving this example to say somebody is still trying to find a way on transportation in Namibia. Mm. Another person is building an industry of EVs. Somebody is still trying to find a way on advancement in terms of medical care. Mm. Another person is on the level of an AI doctor. We are not speaking the same language.
Yeah.
We are completely not speaking the same language. It also has come with industrialization to say, if our discussion now of cocoa is being extended to Namibia, what is that that Namibia has that can resemble what's happening in Nigeria, what's happening in Ivory Coast and Ghana, looking at food production?
Mm.
How much are we importing in terms of food production?
Mm.
How much are we making? Are we utilizing our local farmers? Do you know that there are still farmers who don't make it to the market? Their things are being rotten. Yeah. In Namibia.
Yeah. Or they eat it.
No, they eat it, but some of them, they are into excess.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult. And
which part is difficult?
No, it's very difficult to make somebody understand that the solution to national problem is the people themselves.
Yeah.
The solution is me and you. It's not outside.
Mm. It's also what the Nigerians explained.
Yeah, it's not outside, because outside they are solving themselves with us.
We form part of their solution.
We are part of their solution, but they are not part of our solution. And people must also understand that you can change things without breaking friendship.
Mm.
People just understand you. To say from this year to this year, this market we are venturing into it,
mm.
or this market is being supported. Or if you are supporting this market, you must be ready to transform.
Mm.
Because we don't need to praise everybody.
Yeah.
We know we are friends to all and an enemy to none, except if you are in conflict with our policy.
Mm.
But you may be in conflict with our policy softly.
Yeah.
Like just supplying us.
Or accidentally. I'll say accidentally because...
Yeah, because you also do not know. Because you also do not know.
Yeah.
Because there is still nobody who stood up and say... The continuation of Namibia being given everything from the world is a danger to innovation. It's a danger to creativity of Namibians.
Mm.
The overlooking of the creative sector in tourism, because the creative sector, for example, in tourism, these guys that are selling just these small products, the overlook of these guys is a distraction of the future industries.
Yeah.
Because if these guys are making ceramics, they are designing with African, and they are also making, rings and all these things, but just to buy a few things. But if you support them, they can expand.
Yeah.
But overlooking of your own people will become very dangerous in the future. The same thing with the mining sector.
Mm.
If we are speaking about the mining industry in Namibia, the main players in the mining sectors are not the employees.
Mm.
These are the small-scale miners that we pay 10% of the international market value, as economists are saying.
Or we make the market value in Namibian dollars, which is not even a 10% of the international market.
That's what I tell you.
Yeah, and then the price tag is negotiated here between Namibian and Namibian, because the Namibian buying from that small-scale miner is going to take that product and sell it internationally off for an international price.
Mm. And really, I just, as I told you already, to say my area of interest is green schemes.
Yeah.
I still want to get all the reports. I'm still doing my best to get all the reports and to see that what would be the main cause of our green scheme not producing to the full capacity. Is it climate change? Is that we are incapable? or we do not have water, or it's energy. Because
I think it's the last two, water and energy.
Yeah, because the initial aim is to make sure that food security must be prioritized.
Mm.
And Greenskin from last year, Prime Minister said they're 100% operational. That's what he said.
Actually, go look at the president's visits.
Yeah.
Where she visited the five out of the seven.
Yeah.
Look, and you'll see there's a theme. There's a common theme between them all.
Mm.
You realize it'll answer your last two. Mm. It'll answer your question as to which one of the four options you mentioned.
Yeah.
And you'll see why I said it's the last two.
Yeah.
Energy and water.
Yeah.
Because much of the things was a broken pump here.
Mm.
A broken tractor there.
Mm.
A water pipe that burst, but they can't fix it.
Yeah.
Stuff. It's small. It's things. Okay, not small. It's things like that.
Yeah. I think that is where we have to get into. Then we can also, I think that also lead us to what we should do. Because one magic pill will be able to sort out many others.
Yeah.
Because if everything boiled down to energy,
mm.
then we go and sit down in the boardroom of the Ministry of Industry and Mines and to say what can we do
mm.
and what have we done?
Mm.
Then we sort out that issue. Otherwise, it's going to be a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it will be. It will be. Mm. We're going to take a short break, guys, and we're going to come back right after this. Just catching our breath, that's all. But you have the opportunity also to contribute in terms of calling through at 083-2884-01.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu mbali o hetatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
And coming back, dear listeners, there from the extended break, you are still here on The Home Run with yours truly. That's obviously myself and David. We just had a quick particular breather in terms of just allowing the blood to circulate a little bit through our legs. But yes, where we left off, obviously, the conversation has been about how do you look at the aspect of achieving your industrial goals. Even though from a cocoa-based African perspective of the cocoa production elements in West Africa, in Nigeria to be specific, three particular key things pop out. Now, I forgot also to add on in terms of the, for example, the military industrial complex development dimension, specifically with the aspect of like bullet cartridges and firearms and the likes. Some of the particular immediate things that you will see happening is it'll also influence research and development specifically. Now, currently happening in the world, the applications around robotics, AI, and even advanced weapons systems, this has all been procured, for example, in the American context, from the American industrial, private industrial, private sector that operates in that industrial scenario. Self-driving cars, various kinds of suspension systems, off-field, let's call it like in the bush, hardware that can be used in very harsh terrains. All of that is procured from the private sector in one way or another. In a South African context, it's more concentrated within the South African government's scenario because, and like I said, for once, I'm not talking about mining. I don't have to touch mining. I don't have to go anywhere close to mining. But the core concern that you can see continuously, emanating and showing itself and basically exposing itself in our discussion is a scenario of looking at, and it's not even low-hanging fruit, my goodness. It's not even low-hanging fruit. It's targeted industrial interventions. Now, the one voice that obviously came through was from Adeyagbo, who cited develop your own market. Namibia does have localized markets. And I'm not talking about from a purely production-based perspective. There is consumption desire. There is consumption desire. There is a need for wearing a locally produced t-shirt. There is a need for wearing a locally produced shoe. There is a need for wearing a locally produced jacket, even though we are making those other particular accessories already from a leather production scenario. That does happen. But when you now have to look at, okay, how many times has the accessibility of this product been duplicated over in the Namibian economy? You see, you only find one shop in Windhoek or two shops in Windhoek and a shop and a half in Swakop. I don't know if a shop would exist in Ongwediva or if a shop exists if a shop exists in Kietmans. But you have to ask yourself the question of like luxury leather products, because leather products are technically very expensive consumer products. A leather jacket, David. Oh, let me first ask you just for a bit of trivia. What's the lowest price tag you've ever heard for a 100% leather jacket for a man? What's the lowest price you've ever heard of?
2.5.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know where they are currently right now?
Yeah.
In what we Namibians can afford. From 5,000 up. So, 100% locally sourced leather products converted into leather or leather hides converted into the leather product.
I think I get it wrong. 100% the leather products in Namibia, few of them that you see.
Yeah.
A few of them that you see.
So,
they are not even the interest of, because of the nature of the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we look at that dimension of the product itself.
Yeah.
When we look at that dimension of what the product can offer, meaning you can manufacture premium products.
Yeah.
You can manufacture, mid-range products accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
It's obviously based upon the kind of skill set that you apply to the resource.
Yeah.
So the resource manifests the quality to the consumer. Okay, not the resource, more the skills and the skill sets from the people, from the artisans, so that they can manifest the quality to the consumer. The one lady, Amangbo, she made a very good statement about ensuring if you want that price for your product, you've got to ensure this quality gets supplied every time. Meaning, don't send me, if we have negotiated in our contract, you are sending me 10 quality apples that don't have any blemishes on them. They are red. All 10 are red.
Yeah.
So that I can sell 10.
It's a commitment to the contract.
Yes. Yeah. 10 quality red apples. And you are selling me, in every batch of 10 apples, there's 2 that have blemishes on.
And you always have a reason to explain.
But you demand the full price because you, according to you, you supplied 10 apples.
Yeah, I think that is also something that needs to be looked at, especially in terms of commitment. But let it start.
Yeah,
let it start, because that is a market on its own too. Let it start. If you are at the premium level and also middle fine products, I think it can be done. You know, there are people that there is a lot of market that we can venture into. The main question is only that in the world of capitalism, somebody has to, one, some of the market's players have to die or they have to be let go. Mm. Because if you have a system that is already monopolized, it's very difficult to engage into.
Mm.
You know, the natural death of local businesses is happening not necessarily because they are not pushing. Mm. It's because there is a strong establishment of monopolization that is very difficult to regulate. Sometimes they're even regulating themselves. That is why sometimes you start to see that why a hardworking local business person will only reach a certain standard because of the established competition that will not allow to these local businesses to be protected. We can do it everywhere. If you want to get into manufacturing, for example, of clothes, at a larger scale, at a Dinapama level is good.
Yeah.
Bring 3 Dinapamas. Things are going to change. The things are going to change in the price of clothes, the price of quality products are going to change.
Yeah.
And somebody has to agree to say, yes, local businesses are becoming strong. We have to find another market, or we have to venture into collaboration. That's the only way they are going to survive. And that is the only thing, because if I remember 2024, the beginning of 2025, where there was an engagement of a ministry of at that time is trade, industrialization and trade at that time, where there was an engagement on I think Africa would need a free trade area. And also the aspect of growth at home strategy to support the local businesses. And one of the arguments which was given is that why schools cannot have regional suppliers of uniform from Namibia? That's one of the things which was given. But if you look at it deeply to say, why does it have to take a sophisticated person to explain those things? Because if it's already indicated to say, if Namibians can produce school uniforms and supply them to their local consumers, why can't that happen? Why do you still have to take uniform outside the country if you have people that are trained? Because sometimes it's not about people, you don't have them. It's about, is the market really allowing people to operate at that level?
Yeah.
Most of the people that I've seen, especially those who are trained how to make clothes, they are making it for survival. They are fixing our clothes in the street. They are making wedding. If you get a tender, it's a wedding, especially seasonal time like this one.
Mm.
But they are not exposed to major industries.
Hey, those guys make money.
Yeah, they make.
And they are order with me. They're technically order. Okay, according to Prime Minister Ngurare's explanation and Minister Shafuda's explanation, they are the order with me, the original OGs of order with me.
The guy who are fixing clothes.
And the seamstresses that make the wedding garments and stuff.
Yeah.
Those guys are the original order. But you know what, David? Those guys make money.
Yeah, they make money, but are they exposed to a bigger market? They are only making money at the individual level, but are they exposed to a bigger market?
The question you have to ask is, Do they have capability to serve a bigger market?
Is the system allowing them to expand their capabilities too? Because sometimes it's not about them.
Yeah.
And we must be very honest to say, if the environment is favorable,
yeah,
why BIPA is not telling us the numbers of businesses that are transiting to the next level every year?
Yeah.
If the environment is favorable, because in a capitalist system,
mm,
the state makes sure that the regulations allow,
mm,
for a fair play.
Mm.
You can't put the elephant and the rabbit in a ring. The elephant must fight each other.
I'm just thinking about that fight.
No, it is not. It's not a fair fight. It's not a fair fight.
Because I think I'm thinking about this, but I'm like,
yeah. Now you have a giant, and you cannot even see who he's fighting with.
Yeah.
Just stepping on it, then it's a deal done.
Yeah.
If the environment is favorable,
yeah,
BIPA statistic would already tell us,
yeah,
to say these are the transition of from a lower business to a next scale.
Mm.
But if the environment is not favorable, or the environment is not well regulated,
mm,
then you will not even want to speak about those statistics.
Mm.
Just ask two questions. How many businesses are registered in Namibia?
Mm.
How many are owned by the young people? How many have been operational for the past 100 years? For the past 10 years?
Let's expand it to 100 years, because there are companies from pre-independence here.
Yeah.
Then we
can come to 10 years. How many of, what is the level of Namibia business growth?
Yeah.
Then you'll be able to tell you. Then they'll be able to tell it. You know, some are only registered when they are new industry, green hydrogen, 20,000 green.
And then it's an NGO.
It's an NGO. Then you have an NGO about advocacy on the green sector,
yeah,
oil and gas, these things. But it already tell you that the market have owners. You produce people who are making clothes, but they are just cornered in their corner. Maybe have a Kamini shop,
mm,
just for the service at that level. But that was not supposed to be the aim. The aim was supposed to be, you are trained so that you can be part of the bigger industry, so that we don't import as we are importing now, so that every leader will be able to be comfortable instead of ordering suits from outside or ordering a dress from outside. They will be very happy to buy from a local.
Mm.
That's what they do in China. It's what they do in UK.
Mm.
It's what they do in
Germany.
In Germany.
In Russia.
And everywhere. They are buying their own products.
Yeah.
The whole parliament, I don't want to go to parliament. I want to go to the ministry that are dealing with that. And I'm always referencing this to say I'm always very happy to see.
But that ministry is in charge of mining.
No.
International.
I'm always very happy. She's giving a very nice example.
Yeah.
Whether she's buying from Africa or she's buying from Namibia, that's a very good example.
Mm.
It's very rare to find her wearing a suit. Even our president is giving a good example.
Mm.
That to say, why can't you produce locally or African if you don't want to go to that level?
Mm.
Because otherwise, if you look at the scale of Namibia to a US dollar and you speak about international market, then you realize that you have a lot of money to lose, especially if you want the good things.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, there will always be not a compromise situation, but there will always be like a give or take situation. The thing that I just don't want to see Namibia experience, David, is an emergency pops up and we have to react. And then suddenly we have to identify, should we sell a resource to a trade partner or should we hold the resource back?
Yeah.
Currently, right now, for example, countries like South Africa and Europe and North America, they will buy our red meat, hands down. They will just ask us, please comply with these requirements. We meet the requirements, we ship the red meat.
Mm.
The concern that I know will happen is what happens if Europe says, you know what, we have developed an appetite for insects. We can now 3D print a hamburger and a steak. Thank you, Namibia. You've been good to us, but we don't want your red meat anymore. We've become completely vegan and vegetarian here in Europe.
Yeah.
What then happens? Then we want to run to Asia and we ask Asia, please buy our red meat. And then Asia says, but we also have our red meat. We have Australia right here.
Mm.
We can buy from Australia.
Yeah.
So you can sometimes see that longevity is never guaranteed.
No, longevity is not going to be guaranteed.
Yeah.
Until you have a backup plan.
Yeah.
Longevity, especially when you are too dependent.
Yeah.
you become like a dependent partner. Either it's a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or either it's a husband or a wife. No, I'm just telling you. No, I'm just telling you. You become independent.
Boyfriends and girlfriends have you heard of, David, that are that dependent?
No, you know of relationship which are economic strategic move. that one is what's happening. You don't need to be told.
Yeah.
No, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
But what is that when somebody depends so much on another person, it's very easy for that person to be abused. You understand?
Yeah.
Most of the partners, if you look at the gender-based violence, you don't need statistics.
Yeah.
Most of the partners that that are abused
are from an economic. And you are actually right, because I have that
underprivileged
report.
Economic status.
Yeah.
You know what rich people do? They argue, just go to his Benz and leave the argument and go home.
Yeah.
Or go and buy another house while you are busy arguing with this one. Or go to Cape Town to rest. And think.
Or they fly. They fly to Munich and go and rest there.
Yeah, they fly to. And this one, they say, no, I invest my 20,000 in you, and it's the only thing I had. I gamble between my parents and you.
Yeah.
Then they are killing each other.
Yeah.
Then it's the same with a partner like Namibia. Mm. If you are in a trading partner with somebody like Namibia, you must also look at where your partner wants to get into, because Namibia is a partner who wants to grow also to say, you guys, we have been also getting it from you, but I want to grow on my own.
Yeah.
But this dependency will become toxic if there is no more mutual benefits.
Yeah.
Because country will always change. And we must come to terms that any other country will choose its interest over your interest.
Yeah.
Then you can easily be thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
We almost went under the bus when South Africa was shaking with the U.S. But let's think South Africa had an alternative.
Mm. And South Africa can always adjust.
Yeah.
Do you know what's the funny thing?
No, but they adjust very fast.
Even though they are in a post-colonial phase now.
No,
They can always adjust.
No, they shift very fast. Yeah. And without a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah.
No, they shift very fast. Or that's why that was going to be our problem.
Yeah. Or the collateral happens.
Yeah.
Ne? Like, remember the smelting company?
Yeah.
ArcelorMittal South Africa last year.
Yeah.
Where they're complaining about the recycled metals that are coming back into the economy, and then they mentioned China or Chinese exports of metal products to South Africa, and they said, yeah, the potential is that the 100,000 jobs could be lost in South Africa, and all it took was the South African government to sit and listen to the complaints, the concerns, and you know, even industry came out and said, hey, listen, there are options to help this company survive still in South Africa and not to lose the 100,000 jobs. But South Africa won't cry if 100,000 people lose their jobs. Yes, it looks bad, but they'll be able to adapt and to pivot. Namibia, David, we can't lose 100,000 jobs. We're not even talking about a sector crashing. We're talking about the Namibian economy crashing. We don't have that luxury to lose 100,000 jobs.
No, we never had the luxury. We have been just pushing, but we never had the luxury. No, luxury is a vocabulary that we do not have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you have it, it's temporary.
Yeah.
Unless you really change. Because if you, how are you going to lose 100,000 from where?
Out of 500,000.
No, 100,000, you're going to lose 100,000 from where?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, imagine if it was just one sector that had 100,000 jobs.
No, yeah.
No, it would be carnage, David. Won't even be a problem. It'll be carnage.
No, it'll be more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be chaos.
No, it'll be chaotic.
Yeah.
And also, you know, COVID-19 taught us one lesson. Taught us one lesson that Namibia survived, and there is one statement which was, I think, I don't know if it's Genkop, President Genkop or President Mwene Tumbo, who said that Namibia survived difficult situations, survived the strongest army in Africa at that time. We can still survive this. Maybe that is also the motivation to say, look at what happened to COVID-19. How many industries were closing? How many people lost their jobs? But we are still here. The main thing is that can we also survive the time of shifting? in terms of new industry being built? Mm. Can you also survive the times of shifting in terms of trade arrangements? Can you also survive being hated? And that is what we are scared of. That is what we are scared of. In our discussion, we are saying we are tired of being exploited.
Mm.
But when you look at what we are continue doing,
yeah,
it's like having that partner that we... You know, Shwambo, there is something that is called Ohore Oshikwanyama, the love of Ekwanyama. But that is a long time, those days. Yeah, no, it's not an insult, ne?
I know. I was hoping it would not be, but yeah.
You have also heard of that, ne? Yeah. To say even if you beat the partner at that time, you know, Oshikwanyama tradition was so deep, ne? Then they were rooted in that love to say, whatever happened to your partner, you must be there. Mm. But it's only that now things have changed. That's why even if you beat that partner, it's those years now.
Mm.
To say she will still come back. The family will still send her away to say, no, it's still your partner. You guys, you got married. You can work things out. And we can also compare that into a trade relations to say international trade continue to beat us with their laws, continue to dictate with their laws, continue to introduce things that we cannot even reciprocate because we don't have standard.
Yeah.
But we are still going there because where else are we going?
Yeah. What else do we
know? But we are scared of making those difficult decisions that can shake us a little bit,
yeah,
but can create long-term
benefits.
Long-term benefits.
I mean, it's also a question, David, of, you know, do we know anything better? Have we seen anything better? Now, some of the interesting things, obviously, the listeners that pop up from the conversation has been a dimension of, you know, what do you have to do personally? Or what does Namibia have to do personally? I'm not here to give the answers in terms of like an EGLFM perspective because the answers are out there between you. From the creative sector or the cultural creative sector to the, you know, the various other particular latent low-hanging fruits that supposedly exist. All those things are there. All those things, there's even a direct stimulating fund known as that National Youth Fund situation. It's right there. It's there to financially stimulate the activity for the proposal, the activity based on the proposal that you're going to submit. It's just about how you need to prove how you can pay back that money. Other particular dimensions that would come about in going ahead would be, you know, how do people translate national policy for their personal particular means or their personal particular reasons or needs? Why do I explain it like that? It's primarily what I was explained and taught about when you open up your own business. You've got to look for a need. Go and look in this economy, go into this economy. If you're someone that is dreaming or still dreams about opening up a company or business in this economy, this Namibian economy, not the current economy as it is, but the Namibian economy. Go into the Namibian economy and go and ask yourself, what is not there? What do you think you can improve on? And then do you think you will be able to make your money back? It's a good reason. It's a good thing that David mentioned according to Prime Minister Ngurare's reference of the original OG, order with me's, you know, the people that, seamstresses and tailors, seamstresses and tailors and fashion designers in Namibia. Cause those are the people that can literally elevate and provide the necessary intervention or disruption into the Namibian local space for the jobs that are being sought. Remember, we haven't asked the Namibian economy, meaning you and me, outside of the political economy, meaning the planners of this economy, what jobs do you want? What jobs do you want? What jobs do you want? Do you just want a job for the sake of a job? Or is there a specific job that you feel that you could grow into, that you could do, that you could learn while being paid for it, while doing it? Is there a specific job that you want to do? The reason I ask a question like that is in some cases, so far, across the political economy dimension, remember, political economy, according to the economists, are the people who make the decisions about what economic opportunities can manifest. And they are the politicians. In the realm of the political economy, has the political economy ever asked you, yes, you, the Namibian out there, what jobs do you want? Because much of the election promises were definitely based upon creating jobs. David referenced it right here in the studio also. The threat lies in who can basically participate in this economy. And if the longer the person stays disenfranchised, the longer potentially the resentment and the discontent would fester. It would be like an untreated wound that would just continuously stay infected and then ultimately develop into gangrene, and then ultimately the surgeon has to show up and amputate. We don't want to amputate anything. I'm not calling for any kind of amputations as well. But was an assessment, a research, a survey, a national census done about what jobs do you want to see in Namibia? What jobs do you want the youth who are to be catered for currently? What jobs do you want them to do? Are we talking about garbage collection jobs? Like the other job, David, the circular economy suggestion that I cited?
Yeah.
Because that can help the youth with like short-term money needs right now. You know, if you want a couple of dollars now, you're unemployed, let's say at home, then let's say your parents bought some groceries last night and there was some, there was some garbage that was immediately available for to be discarded. And you can take that garbage, walk to that idea that I showed you.
Yeah.
And you can get money like that, buy yourself a snack, and then voila, you know, the circular economy is working. But the example that we have in Windhoek is the threat that you explained.
No, it's good. Economy can also become a criminal motivator.
Yeah.
In this destroy the main infrastructure that you are trying to build.
Exactly. Yeah. And it works against the main principle that you're trying to address.
That's why that's why it also come back to what I said, to say there was never a study done on how to develop an unequal society in the 21st century.
Exactly.
Yeah, because developing an unequal society in the 21st century, it's not the same as developing an unequal society in the 20th century. Because here, you are competing in a fragmented world.
Mm.
You have fast-growing technology. And while you are solving this problem, the solution can also become a problem.
Mm.
Yeah, that is why when you are bringing food, people they are taking the wheels from the car that is bringing food, because they are seeing there is something of value. Yeah, because you did not balance the things. And that's why you, it's true. It's true. Yeah, it's true, because them, they also do not understand where you are operating from.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you think you're on the same page, but you are definitely not on the same page. That's why a coherent approach is necessary. A simplification of policies is necessary. And also understand that we are moving in the same direction.
Mm.
Or sometimes you just need to give people, I'm always indicating to say, give people food. So they can think also.
Yeah.
Give people food, give people clean water, give people better housing. Then we start talking about power plant. Because if you deal with those basics, people will not start digging, copper cables.
Yeah.
Because that is also risky.
It is.
Yeah, they will not start doing that.
And even though the copper cable factors in as a crucial piece of infrastructure that can help with the rural electrification policy the government had implemented at 2018. Now you've got a guy that knows the value of the copper cable hanging there, And the people on the ground want electricity at home, but there's one guy telling his five buddies, you know what, guys, mm-hmm. let's take this risk for short term.
Mm-hmm. They become casualty also. Electricity.
Which is true. It's a fact. It's a fact.
No, you become casualty of survivor.
Yeah.
It's an interesting conversation. It's a very, very interesting conversation.
Because it continuously highlights all the particular points.
Yeah.
It highlights the traps,
yeah.
the opportunity, the current situation, the negatives, the definite threats.
Because imagine there's a saying to say, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Yeah.
And that is the responsibility of a king. That's why kings, they do not speak a lot. They think most of the time because you deal with a lot of problems.
Yeah,
that's why you see when you look at our leaders, sometimes they make decisions. Sometimes they make a decision that they can also reverse. Maybe they realize to say this one is not working, which is quite fine. But you also start understanding that once you start reading and see things, you start seeing the complication of things. You start to see that it's not about I want this pro to be developed tomorrow. You start realizing that there's a lot of players. You start realizing that when a CEO of City of Windhoek, for example, was presenting what he was going to do in the public presentation of that interview, although he has that good intention of doing, or maybe he was capable, or he is still capable of doing what he wanted to do, there is a system that he has to go through.
Yeah.
And there are also people that you have to go through. That's why maybe when you understand, it's easier for us to see which one is a priority, which one is not a priority.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can look at that. If we speak about COCO now, as we have that discussion, it's interesting also to see that in terms of Namibia, do we really need to add value to everything? Or we need to first look at which one is working, which one is not working. Then we can be in that process. But if we are biting all the apples, then we see.
But here's the thing. Yeah. Let's use your biting the apples reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You taste, because you're just biting.
Mm-hmm.
You're not eating the whole apple.
Yeah.
You're just biting this one apple. Oh, it's a nice and sweet apple. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me see that green apple. And you realize, okay, this one is a little bit bitter and on the acidic side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bite the next apple. You say, okay, so this one is a slightly sweeter than this other green one. And then you get that other hard red one that sometimes pops up.
Yeah.
But what we've done is spoil the apples. We've not really utilized the apple.
Yeah.
Because all we did was bite.
Yeah.
We didn't eat the whole thing and then said, you know what, I'm going to go pursue this apple's agenda. This sweet one, this red one. Or that soft, sweet, red, green one. Or that soft, green one. Or the hard, green one. You're not dedicating yourself to one of them.
Yeah, concentration also matters.
Yeah.
That's why I'm always telling people that even if I'm good at multitasking, there are things that I have to dedicate myself to say, this one I have to do it.
You know, yeah, David, yeah. what they said about multitasking?
Yeah.
There's a research actually about it.
Yeah.
I was also good at multitasking.
Yeah.
And it helped me to keep my thoughts, you know, in line in terms of if you're good at multitasking.
Yeah.
Do you know that we end up not being really good at any task?
Yeah. That's why I tell people that I'm not good with social affairs and health lives. but with maybe give me political economy so we can discuss those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm always telling people to say, it's easy to say that you do not know things. It's easy for me to say I don't know technological advancement. I may read about it, but I don't know it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to political economy,
yeah,
international relations, maybe I know two or three things. That one I can say there are things that I read about and I research about, and we can laugh and talk about it.
Yeah.
But honestly, being the best at everything, it has never worked. It may give you perspective. It has never worked. That's why it's the same with when we are analyzing Namibia progress in terms of SDG. We are almost good at everything. Then except gender equality, that we did very well.
But that was interesting there. When I looked at that report.
Yeah, but other things, uh-uh.
That dashboard was funny.
Yeah.
But it was alarming.
No, it was alarming because it's explaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's explaining.
And it was visualizing to us, basically.
Yeah,
yeah, you guys are promoting the right thing that mm-hmm. helps to elevate women as well.
Yeah.
But you need to do the other things around that as well.
Mm.
Instead of just stagnating, going back, there was one going down.
Mm.
The others were just stagnant on orange.
Mm.
And we had a couple on yellow.
And what is shocking you is also the indicators. Because you cannot argue with an indicator, because those indicators, they are well explained.
Yeah.
To say, if I say your peace and stability is declining, what do I mean? Do I really mean that I hate your country? I mean gender-based violence is at these statistics.
Yeah.
I mean arms being sold out is at these statistics. I mean unfinalized cases at these statistics.
Mm.
And where are we going to argue?
Crime statistics.
Yeah, your magistrates are not protected. Your judicial system, they get banned every day.
Or you've got local procurement that doesn't finish with projects.
Yeah.
For the government,
yeah,
but then they still want to apply to other projects to get that money as well.
Mm.
But you didn't finish this project.
Yeah. That's why.
And this project will make money for us.
That's why assessment always matters. I was talking to my little cousin recently when they went to get their reports. It's a good thing that they pass, although not what they wanted.
Mm.
One of the things that there is always anxiety when you are getting that assessment. But it's very important for you to go forward.
Mm.
They're always scared of going and getting their report cards and certificates at school.
Mm.
But no, you know exactly
all,
what you
think. We all were there.
Yeah, we all were there. I was even joking with them to say, no, that time you just even want to turn into a dog. That does not have responsibilities that day. But you still have to get it.
You just
want to
walk there for no reason.
But you still get it. But after that assessment, it's up to you to see that did the teacher really hate me?
Mm.
Or is it me who is not putting effort?
Yeah.
Because there's always a relationship between how you perform in the subject and what effort you have put in. Or what circumstances were you in.
Mm.
Maybe you were going through a lot. Maybe your family was not in order.
Mm.
This is your performance. You can look at it. Because a lot of people, they look at assessment, then they blame the person who is in charge.
Yeah.
But you also look at the environment to say, what is the environment of the child?
Yeah.
In the same way we are assessing Namibia to say, what was the environment of Namibia in the past 5 years.
Mm.
Why are these economic indicators here? Why are we hitting below the target? If the environment was okay, then we look at an individual. What is an individual did not do?
Mm.
Then that is our evaluation from a national perspective. Then we can get it. But other than that, we are sharing the same qualities with Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Ghana when it comes to creating jobs outside. Creating billions of dollars of industry, as you mentioned those statistics. And somebody must really look at it, not with jealous, but with motivation, to say if you have done well locally, if you have attracted right investment, because investment has always been coming in that industry.
Yeah.
Maybe one day you would be where those countries are, or maybe closer to where they are because they are already ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's actually a good thing that you're highlighting that, David. But before we actually continue, let's quickly take a break and then we come back after it. Vilvichi University for the 2027 application that is now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvichi University, where everyone is an achiever. So, I think it's a given, David, specifically where this is now just on a broad observation.
Yeah.
There is a ticking clock against much of us African countries because our politicians made promises to us about achieving employment. They recognize that they've got to encourage some sort of industrialization. But when you look at how we're going about this, the unfortunate thing that is always there is that there's always a big player that is present in the goal that the government wants to achieve.
Yeah.
There's already a big player or big players there.
Mm.
You see, and the worst part is you can't achieve that goal without the involvement of these guys. They already employ people.
Well, what do you mean?
For example, the industrialization goal.
Yeah.
Mm. You would immediately identify when you do an analysis of an economy or in a specific sector. You would realize that there's a couple of companies already present there. They are operating at their scale because they recognize this is the scale of this economy.
Yeah.
They already employ people there. Mm. They already have the knowledge, the capacity, the know-how.
Yeah.
They're not just going to randomly enlarge their workforce if they don't have more contracts that give more rewards.
Yeah.
But the downside is when you do that layman's or the ordinary person's assessment of an economy, you realize, but then if I have to step into a new sector, there's already someone there.
Yeah.
What new can I bring to something that's already there?
No, it's a good thing. But one thing I want to say is that when you mention about being players, when you want to...
Just hold on, David. We'll quickly take a short break.
Okay,
my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then USAVE has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 USAVE voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 USAVE voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. USAVE, where good food costs less.
So we come back, dear listeners, from the quick break right there. And yes, you're still here in the company of yours truly. That's myself and David here on the home run. That's minus Captain Kavango for now. Don't tell him, David, but I think he might be listening. And he'd come and beat me up. But yeah, in terms of this Thursday edition of the home run, but the dilemma where you were just leaving off your train of thought has been about that you would immediately identify that there are already operators within a specific sector.
Yeah, and that is also a good thing because there is a difference between industrialization and imitating.
Mm.
And if you look at countries that did it well, they did not imitate.
Mm.
They have utilized what others had. Then they did their own thing.
Mm.
In many long time ago, we thought industrialization was buildings. We thought industrialization is having a high tech airport.
Yeah.
But when we start growing up, we realized to say industrialization cannot be functional without capable people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why now when you speak about industrialization, other big players that have played already in other countries in industrializing, we can't say we want Namibia to be like UK. We can't say we want Namibia to be like China or Singapore.
Mm.
We must ask ourselves, what do we want
for ourselves?
Yeah. Then industrialization will mean differently to different people. Because if you want the high tech that is being used in Beijing Airport, for example, to be in Hosea Kutako International Airport, you already lost it because you are chasing ghosts.
Yeah.
By the time you reach there, they are already at a different level. Then you will be left with people not saved.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why when whether you have big players or no big players, it's about who, what are you defining? What are your priorities?
Mm.
Are our priorities really to build a high tech city where you have more than half of the population that are going home without food or electricity? Is that what we want? Is that
or without shelter?
Or without shelter? Is that what our goal is?
Mm.
Is our goal to be the greatest producer of oil, or our goal is to make sure that oil is utilized for the benefit of the people? Because if we want to be great in terms of the public, because in many things that we have done, we want the world to look at us.
Mm.
When we are accommodating guests at the beautiful hotels, we are giving them good accommodation. That is what the world wants us to be.
Yeah.
But regardless of what is happening, is that really
what we want?
What you want? And if that is what we want, is that really bring out to the problem of where our problem is? Yesterday, the president mentioned who our real enemy is.
Mm.
The enemy is not outside with guns. Mm. The enemy is the problem that we are facing.
Mm.
And we must shoot directly to that. We can't continue to be like other people. And that is the only thing that can take us from this understanding of saying, you can only develop when you have what. But if the people are taken care of, then other things will just fall into places.
Yeah.
Maybe our industrialization will meet differently because we're in different part of the world. Maybe our industrialization will mean integration of the society together.
Yeah.
Yeah, because how can we industrialize having cocoa, having chocolate factories if we are not buying from Cameroon, from Nigeria, from Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
We are going to be industrialized in our own way. Our industrialization must look like an industrialization of a country that is the third largest producer of uranium.
Yeah,
a country that is having two deserts. That will be defined our industrialization.
Yeah,
China will not be like that. Singapore will not be like us. Even when we advance to the first stage, they will not be like us because we are completely a different area.
Mm.
But yeah, if we are continue to chase ghosts, it will not. We are not going. We never catch any. We never catch one.
We'll just be catching air.
Yeah, we are trying to catch up.
Yeah. Because and how do you catch air?
We are trying to catch up because we are not catching up.
Yeah.
When you try to catch up, people will introduce another product. You know, this one is good. Go buy it.
Yeah.
While you are busy putting your things in order, they say, no, we have a new product in medicine. Mm. This one can cure all your diseases and all these things. But you still have an integrated traditional medication.
Mm.
No, I think chasing of ghosts is coming to an end because, you know what, we are getting tired of conversations.
you're talking about mirages, ghosts.
Yeah,
and
fantasy.
Yeah, fantasies. Yeah.
And fantasy.
I mean, the key message in our last sort of like eight minutes, that we obviously sit with has been, here's the thing, David. Obviously, we are having this conversation, we're having this discourse, we've had this multiple times also on Eagle FM.
Mm.
Some people are trying to replicate these conversations, but they're having more like interviews about, you know, what should be the situation instead of how flexible can we be with this future that we still have to grasp. Like you said, it must be a Namibian future.
Yeah.
Not a copy and paste Singapore version for Namibia. No,
the world will detect us. Then they will charge us for plagiarism.
And then they'll even tell us, are you guys serious?
Okay, it's for real.
Yeah. Mm. So it has to be a scenario where we assess ourselves and the kind of future we want to build. I sometimes see a clear cut role or a clear cut path. You know, you take the shortest, you know, your simplification theory.
Yeah.
You take the shortest route to get to the solution or to the problem.
Mm.
For example, David, the biggest concern that we've seen, and we even have the show Ulwazi here on air.
Mm.
The biggest concern I've seen is that the other towns are not modernizing.
Yeah.
Windhoek keeps growing. Swakop keeps growing. Walvis keeps growing. But it's always just three spots.
Yeah.
They get the biggest investments in property. They get the biggest investments in creating jobs.
Mm.
But now all the Namibians want to work there. But no one is telling everybody, like saying, wait. Go and build that thing in Opuo.
Yeah.
Go to Opuo and build it there. Yeah. Or go to Gobabis. Gobabis is a important logistics hub.
Yeah.
But believe you me, David, Gobabis looks like it's stuck in the 1950s. It's stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would add something here, add something there. The roads, the main road through the town still looks the same. The facade, you know, the overall image of the town looks the same. But you don't see, like, for example, for logistics hub, new warehousing coming along because it's a logistics hub. A logistics hub needs warehousing. You're not just supposed to be a place I'm driving through.
Yeah.
You find a way to anchor businesses in your locality.
You are mentioning a very important thing. You know when I travel to Ruderitz.
Yeah.
I look at the distance that you travel using a car. You look at the land. One of the things I'm always asking myself, you look at the history of Namibia still having its mark there. You look at the wild horses that were left since
the First World War.
Since 1918. Even after the Namaherero genocide, things got scattered. They are still there, wild horses. Now, I ask myself a question, like what you have mentioned, to say, who own all this kind of land? And why are we always concentrated in one area? And what is underground those that land? And you ask yourself a question to say, could it be that all our solution could be when we start utilizing all these kinds of things? But you will come to the realization of who own it, what are we utilizing it for, and why can't we decentralize? As it has always been an argument to say, decentralization can also bring you new challenges, but also opportunities. The thing that will put us down, will take us down, is a thing of continue chasing what you can only hear, but you cannot see.
Your ghosts.
Yeah.
he didn't want to use the same word. Yeah. David, just use the ghosts.
Yeah, continue chasing ghosts because you forever run.
Yeah.
Because, but when you look at the now, you realize there's, when the question of when is coming, when are we going to?
Yeah.
This thing of we must, who must do it?
Yeah.
We must make sure that we are doing what we must make sure, who is going to do it?
Yeah.
Because if our leaders come from Sunday with that understanding to say, guys, the question is not about must anymore. The question is, why are you not doing it? If Zim is doing it, if South Africa is doing it, if Zambia is doing it. But continue chasing the unnamed object. It will not work. And the 36 years is a long time.
It is.
We are exhausted. Yeah.
It is a long time because. Okay, let me quickly now for the last 4 minutes put us against Cuba. And let's play with the idea, David, of what Cuba could have been if the blockade did not exist since the 1960s. Cuba's only resources, natural resources, were sugarcane and tobacco plants. So two commercial commodities.
Yeah.
But they do have like a few, I think like a few mining enterprises.
Yeah.
You know, to build from. But here's the thing that they had.
They've good cigar, tobacco and sugarcane.
It's 100%.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that they have that we still have to identify in Namibia. They were willing to mobilize those agricultural commodities to get into the next level of saying, hey, listen, we've got to industrialize. This is the 1960s. We need to create new jobs and to be competitive, which brings us to my point of yesterday where I said we will slowly realize that we are competing with our neighbors even in SADC.
Yeah.
So the moment we realize that we have an agenda, which is NDB6, we've got to find a way that, like what the Nigerians in terms of cocoa now are identifying as, why are you not doing these things locally?
It's a good question. And why are we not being assisted? You know, the thing that I ask my trading partner is, Chief, can you please assist me to be like you at some point, even if it's a pre-industry? Can you please assist me because you already know that this thing is not working?
Yeah.
and I don't think it's going to be a wrong thing to ask, to say, why can't we do it here at home?
Yeah.
Because I know the industry which I have built.
But before we actually continue, guys, we are technically cut for time. This does bring us up to the end for today's particular session here on your number one talk radio station.
Yeah.
This has been the Home Run with myself and David.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow, same time, same place. David, your side?
Bye-bye and see you around.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's go for David's greeting. Bye-bye and see you around, guys. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company.